and welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and in today's show, I am absolutely delighted to welcome a very special guest to the show. I know that we have a lot of pro wrestling fans who are fans of this podcast, and if you know anything about the pro wrestling podcasting world, you will have heard of this guy. I am joined today by Kev Castle. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, Ian. How are you, man? Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
No, I'm absolutely delighted to have you on. Not to sound like a fanboy or anything, but I've actually been listening to your podcasts in one form or another probably for about the last 5-6 years. I've been listening to you for a long time. It's a bit surreal for me now that I've got you on the show.
Thanks for listening. And I was on Don Tony Kevin Castle for a long time, about almost, I think, 13 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Anthony, my former co-host, for about 18 years total, because we used to do hotlines back in the day. And then we did a thing called audio casts before they were called podcasts in 2007. And we just went from there. Yeah, it was a long ride, you know, came to an end, unfortunately. But we both wanted to do other things. He's doing his thing. Now I'm doing a new thing, too. And my second love besides wrestling is horror slasher movies. I mean, if you can have a master's degree in that without going to school for it, I would have it. I mean, it's a real love of mine. So when you asked me to come on the show and told me you were a fan of my previous work, I'm like, oh, this is going to go wonderfully, because again, I know just as much about horror films and 80s and 90s pop culture than I do about wrestling. So it's another passion of mine.
That's great to hear, because another one of the reasons why I know, obviously, I just said I'd been checking out some of your shows. I'd actually heard you on another podcast who's friends of ours, who we sort of interact with from time to time, the Texas Podcast Massacre crew.
Oh, yeah.
Great, and I'd heard you on there a few times as well, so I was really, really keen to get you on. But before we get into today's topic, we will just do a bit of housekeeping. So don't forget, guys, you can find this show on all major podcasting platforms. You can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok is at Behind the Screams Podcast. And you can also find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Behind the Screams, where we put out a number of broadcasts every single week. And so, Kev, if our listeners haven't checked out any of your shows yet, where can they find you in the podcasting world?
Well, right now, my main focus is a brand new podcast, which you told me you got a chance to hear the other day. We're only two episodes in. It's called Castle and Chickie's Podcast Adventures, kind of a takeoff on Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, because we're both, me and my partner, her name is Carolyn, but she goes by name Chickie on the show. She's a longtime friend of mine, over 20 years. I know her in real life, you know, hung around together. She used to go to the old club I used to run back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so we're really, really good friends. We know each other very well, but she's about 13, 14 years my junior. So she's a generation behind me. So thought about, and she's a big pop culture nostalgia collector and everything like that. So we just kind of put our heads together and figure, I was off the Don Tony Kevin Castle show. We were figuring about what to do next. And I said, you know, I really want to do something about pop culture, music. I'm also in the nightclub industry, if anybody knows, for about 28 years, my regular job, my real job. You know, wanted to do something, talk about music, pop culture, 80s, 90s, nostalgia, collectible stuff. And we decided to team up and we formed this new show called Castle and Chickie's Podcast Adventures on the Rational Rage Network, which is a new upcoming network for podcasts. We liked the pitch that the owner, Spiro, and his partner, Jimmy, gave us. And we decided to go with them. And so far, it's been great, treating us really well, you know, making us kind of the focal point of what they're doing. Not need to be the star of anything, but I wanted to take my experience that I had and the name recognition that I had in podcasting and just like kind of make a little bit of a left turn and do something a little bit different. And it's going great so far. We talked about, did a Nightmare on Elm Street retrospective the other day because it was Chickie's birthday and she's a big Nightmare on Elm Street fan. So if you're into horror movies, pop culture, music, styles, fashion from back in the day, we actually have a tagline for the show. It's about back in the day and here in the now, because we also talk about the differences of today and yesteryear. So it's a lot of fun and we're having a great time doing it. It's on, we pre-recorded on Tuesday. It's dropped every Wednesday, each and every Wednesday, and it's on the Rational Rage Network. And you can find it on every podcast outlet, Podbean, Spotify, Spreaker, All the Amazon, Google, you can find it everywhere. But that's every Wednesday a new show drops. So and this week we're going to be doing a retrospective on the great Steve Martin, comedy film icon. So yeah, it's as I told you before, it's another passion of mine, movies and throwback kind of stuff. And I lived through that era, you know, so I remember it well. I didn't smoke a lot of weed back then or anything. So I'm good to go. I've always been straight edge. I didn't do any drugs or anything. I got a good, everyone's like, how do you remember so well? And I'm like, I remember, and we're going to talk about it today of our topic of going there. I remember who I was with, how I perceived the movie, how I felt going out of it. It's a memory is a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? So yeah,
definitely. I wish I had more of them because I can barely remember last week.
I know. I mean, I hear people like that. I mean, I put up an old picture of me the other day and I told my friend, you're the one who took it. And she's like, I don't remember. And I'm like, oh, it frustrates me. I'm like, yeah, do you remember? We had a big night that night. I think I remember. It was like 28 years ago. So it's a lot of like old stories and stuff. And on DTKC, we always kind of got recognition for our stories that we told. And growing up, me and my former partner, we had a lot of stories growing up in New York and growing up in Queens and Brooklyn and going to certain clubs and everything that are kind of infamous. So there was a big part of our show that people liked the story. So I thought I was a pretty good storyteller. And that's why I wanted to get into something like the Podcast Adventure Show. And again, I'm having a great time. And I hope it's, you know, successful and has as long as run as my previous project.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the big draws for that, your new show for me, is because when I sort of listen to other podcasts, I tend to very much stick to the sort of the topic. So like, you know, I listen to other horror podcasts, I'll listen to wrestling podcasts and things like that. And your new podcast is offering a really good mix of, like you say, horror movies and, you know, pop culture and things like that. And it's very much very informal and things. So it suits me right down to the ground anyway. But for those who are interested in checking out the Castle and Chickie podcast, that is the link to the podcast will be in the description for this episode, and it'll also be posted across our social media accounts as well. So please do go check that out. And as Kev alluded to, as you were speaking there, today we're going to be talking about Christine.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Sonny, you ever owned a car before?
No. I just got my license.
Start her up.
Her name's Christine.
I like that.
I saw you guys at the football game. How'd you ever get that car fixed up like that?
Oh, just plain old-fashioned hard work, huh?
Ever since he bought that car, he's been obsessed with it. And you know what else? They told us the man who owned that car last died in it.
What do you know about that car?
I know that the guy who owned the car before Arnie, his daughter choked to death in Christine.
I swear it's the car.
How's Christine coming?
Oh, Cherry.
That's funny, you know, because I heard she was totaled.
Well, after I cleaned up the broken glass, it wasn't so bad.
So what if you fix it up, you know, and he just comes back and does it again?
He won't do it again.
Thank you.
was released in 1983, was directed by John Carpenter, written by Stephen King, and stars Keith Gordon, John Stockwell, and Alexandra Paul. IMDb plot is as follows. A nerdish boy buys a strange car with an evil mind of its own, and his nature starts to change to reflect it. It's actually following quite well, because last week's show, and this was purely by mistake, we actually did Maximum Overdrive. So we're getting all the Stephen King vehicular horror movies out of the way in the space of a couple of weeks. So as I said to you just before we started recording, when I was listening to your Nightmare on Elm Street franchise episode that you'd just done, you'd actually raised a couple of points that I had wanted to talk about. And one of the points you were talking about is these sorts of early 80s movies, a lot of them, if you watch them now in 2021 or over the last few years, have dated quite badly. You know, they look their age, essentially. How do you feel that Christine has aged, you know, if you was to, say, watch it again today?
I think, we had talked about, obviously, that particular episode that we did last week on my podcast about Nightmare on Elm Street. And absolutely, when you get to the later Nightmare on Elm Street, the Dream Child, Dream, Freddy's Revenge in 91, it's very dated now. The original Nightmare on Elm Street 84 holds up. I feel the same way about Christine, which was, I remember, I don't even have to look it up. I think it was early December 83. It was a little bit before Christmas break when I was in my freshman year in high school. And there was a lot of, promos for the movie trailers on TV. It looked great. Stephen King was hot at the time in the early 80s. That's when he really came out the box. He came out in the late 70s with his books. But in the early 80s, we had Cujo and Firestarter and stuff like you said. Maximum Overdrive was a little bit later, like 86. But in 83, it was Christine and Cujo. And Cujo's a little bit of a disappointment, but we can talk about that another time. But Christine, the car aspect and stuff, the cool car, I had recognized the star of the movie who played Arnie, because he was in a great movie called Dress to Kill that was out a couple of years earlier, a slasher movie with Angie Dickinson, which is a fantastic movie. Keith Gordon was also in Jaws 2. He had a little resume going. Later on, he'd be in Back to School and Legend of Billie Jean and stuff. So Keith Gordon had a little bit of a name when I was growing up as an upcoming teenage star. John Stockwell was also pretty known too, and John is a big director today. Alexandra Paul too was an it girl. So again, as a teenager, you follow the stuff that's going on in TV and movies. Harry Dean Stanton, Robert Prosky, these were known people at the time. So when you see a couple of stars that you know and you like the subject matter, you're going to go to the movies, and that was a big thing in 83. But if you getting back to the main question that you asked, is if today dated, I don't think so, because when you think about it, also Christine was an early 80s movie that was very 50s oriented, because it was 60s because of the car and the whole nostalgia of the throwback car and this classic car being this, almost this embodiment of evil. So again, it's kind of since it wasn't really an 80s film because it was about an old style car, I don't know. I think it holds up more today. I watched it the other day again, and as I'm watching it, it's funny. I know the dialogue. I know when Buddy, the bully, pulls out the knife and the switchblade and cuts the yogurt. No, I mean, it's just, I remember it so well. I think it holds up. I really do. I don't think it's dated. And I think anybody who's a young person in their teenage years or whatever was into horror or whatever hasn't seen it, it's not going to look at it as like I think it holds up. It's about bullying when you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. The Arnie was heavily bullied. It's about like almost a comeback story, going from a bully to, you know, the hot guy, the hottest guy in the school, the coolest cat in town. Taking that, becoming that guy, but becoming everything that you hated when you think about it. So I think it's a story too, not just about the car, but about the development of Arnie from, the way he started out to what he became. And then ultimately he became probably almost the embodiment of evil when you think about it, because he was entrenched in that car and being the popular guy and getting the girls, something he wasn't before. So it was kind of be careful what you wish for kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. You raised some really interesting points there as well. You know, you're talking about, Arnie sort of becoming everything that he hated, and you know, obviously the theme of bullying is throughout this entire film. You know, it's a massive aspect in the film, and Christine is very representative of almost Arnie's emotional state, isn't it? As he sort of goes on through the film, you know, he's being constantly bullied, he's being picked on, you know, he's being made fun of because he's a virgin, even though all of his friends are as well. You know, he can't get the girl, all of these things. And then, like you said, you get that scene where they're in shop class, and you know, is it Buddy pulls out the knife? Like you were talking about, and all of these things combined. And we also see like sort of hints into his home life as well. You know, he's living with his parents, who appear to be pretty strict. You know, they don't really let him do anything. They're maybe, although I don't think it's ever really stated in the film, they're potentially, you know, maybe heavily religious, and you know, all of those sorts of things. So all of those sorts of things combine, and then it almost sort of manifests itself, doesn't it, into what Christine becomes. Which I think is quite interesting. I'm in complete agreement with you, going back to my earlier question about whether this movie is dated or not, and you hit the nail right on the head there for me in terms of the fact that, you know, this is that 58 Plymouth Fury, Christine is? You know, it's the fact it's a 50s classic car, and there's not a huge amount of pop culture references in this movie in terms of anything that's going to really date it really bad. You know, like, I feel like there's movies that are much newer than this that maybe came out in like the mid to late 2000s that are probably dated worse because, you know, they've got like the original iPhone or an MP3, you know, something like that, technology that's moved on so quickly in the past 20 years that ages something so badly. And I don't really feel like there is much in this movie that does age it at all. So I'm in agreement with you there.
One thing I could say that I didn't know, and I'm maybe you know, maybe you don't, because I really didn't realize it, is that the film was actually, I mean, I kind of knew, but I overlooked it because I was thinking it was based in the year or around the surrounding years of early 80s, but it was supposed to be in September 1978 when they cut to that scene. So it's technically late 70s, which, again, it'd still be, you know, that's why the car was a classic. It was officially over 20 years old, if you remember that scene where John Stockwell was talking to the guy, the older man who was selling the car. So, yeah, the late 70s, too, was very late 70s, early 80s, not much of a difference because, again, I was born in 68, for God's sake. So, I mean, talk about dating myself. But so I remember 1978 very well. So it wasn't 78, 83, not that big a difference. Change in presidencies here in America. But other than that, America, you know, it was a little bit more colorful in the early 80s, late 70s, a little bit more of a darker time. But again, that was just kind of like Any Town USA. It was supposed to be based, though, in California. So again, it was kind of almost like Haddonfield for Halloween. It was like Any Town USA where Arnie grew up. That's what that was, the Stephen King and those kind of horror movies. That's what they tried to make, like, you know, any town, any place, anywhere. So I guess people could relate to it, kind of thing. Yeah. You know?
And it's funny you mentioned Haddonfield as well, because this was filmed, parts of it was filmed in the same town that they filmed Halloween in.
That's right. And because of the John Carpenter connection. Yes. There you go. Yeah.
Like, obviously, you know, and that's one of the big sort of themes of Halloween as well, is, you know, the sort of horror in suburbia, isn't it? That suburban life and things like that as well.
Yeah, because the ultimate, because it can happen anywhere kind of thing. And that's how they kind of got you, that they didn't want to make it so some out of the way place that people, regular folk, can't relate to. And even people out of country, whether you live where you live or around the world, everybody has towns like that, because everybody always likes to make like we're so different. And really, there's a place like that almost in every part of the world and part of the culture, that middle class kind of working class area where you live nice but not too nice, but it's something most people can relate to.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I want to ask you in just a minute about your experiences when you first saw this, seen it in the theaters and things like that. But before I get to that, obviously, with regards to writing and directing this movie, we're talking about two behemoths of horror, aren't we? So written by Stephen King, directed by John Carpenter. Are you a fan of Stephen King novels? Because I know in terms of sort of the people we interact with, there's you know, people say, oh, Stephen King, the movies are much better than his novels. And then you get people say, oh, no, you have to read the novels. The movies aren't that great. You know, things like The Shining in terms of the movie is a very polarizing film. Are you a fan of his novels first of all?
I was in school when junior high and then high school, when you would see guys, girls, or whatever, even at the lunchroom, have books of Stephen King. And I'll be honest with you, it was mostly a lot of females back then who were more book readers than the boys. But then I'd run into some of my friends who were really like into sci-fi and horror and suspense and action. And they would have books and stuff. I never purchased a Stephen King book. I wasn't one to read any of them. I think my older brother Joe had a couple of them. So when the movies came out, I'm like, oh yeah, Joe had the book. You know, my brother was older than me by about 3 years. And so, yeah, I remember that, but I particularly didn't read them, but I knew who he was. And again, when his name was plastered on something, even as a young teen, I knew, let's go see that, because that should be a good story. And John Carpenter was already one of my favorite directors. I love John Carpenter. As a matter of fact, next month for my birthday episode, we're going to do a John Carpenter retrospective on my podcast. And I'm such a big fan of his, and to this day, Escape from New York, all those movies, is just one of my favorites. The synth music soundtracks are so haunting. I love them. And same thing for Christine, that music when the car was going down the highway on fire, and that kind of eerie like synth music and stuff and mixed with piano is brilliant. But so when I saw John, again, even what was I, 15 at the time, age 15? I John Carpenter, Stephen King was slapped on anything, I was down to see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, anyone who has listened to this podcast will know John Carpenter is my number one horror director.
Oh, great. Oh,
of all time. I absolutely adore John Carpenter's works. Halloween, The Thing, Escape from New York, these are all...
The Fog.
He's got wonderful. Such an amazing filmography in terms of things he's directed. And like you said there as well, his scores are so unique, aren't they? Like, you hear a score and you instantly know that's a John Carpenter score. And it's very, very evident here in Christine as well. You were talking about that scene with the car being on fire and the sort of synth. And he's so good. And this is present in things like The Thing and Halloween as well, and some of his other movies. You know, he's just so good at that sort of slow tension build, isn't he? With just his score and obviously, something slow moving on screen, whether that's a car on fire or it's Michael Myers or whatever, he's so good at building that tension, isn't he?
He is, and the music that accompanies it, and even the, like, if you listen to the intro of Escape from New York and that, and it's just really, a female friend of mine, she didn't coin the phrase, but I remember a long time ago she said something that I say to this day, and I give her credit for it. She's like, that's hauntingly beautiful. And I was like, hauntingly beautiful is a great phrase. Because it's just, again, I hear that and it just kind of takes me back. And the same thing for The Fog, that piano, mm-hmm. and that haunting. Again, he knows where to put it and stuff like that. In a way, and it's crazy, and me and you kind of as fans of his know this, in many ways, he's incredibly underrated. Do you know what I mean? As far as in the annals of history, you know, you hear about a lot of other directors who get a lot more props. I think about John Carpenter, and I know this for a fact, is he's never played the Hollywood game.
Yeah.
He made what he wanted to do. He didn't care. He wasn't a political player. If you notice from John, he's very much a libertarian. He's not your typical Hollywood, either real big righty or lefty type of guy. He's very much, I think he was a libertarian before there was even the phrase libertarian years and years ago. But John was a guy, but anybody who worked with him loved him. Obviously, he has a connection to wrestling because he gave Roddy Piper his break, mm-hmm. and They Live, that movie They Live that Piper was in, that Carpenter directed. So I have such an affinity for John Carpenter, and I know a lot about him. I know when he comes back around with his, he plays with his sons in that band where he does all the theme songs. I don't know if you ever saw him on tour or he ever hit your area over there where you live, but he does, obviously COVID, you know, John's got to be careful, he's in his 70s, but yeah. I'm sure he'll be back on the road. I believe he will be either later this year or early next year, and he's got his sons in the band. They do all the themes and they do a backdrop of the screen of all the movies, and they do all the themes for all the movies he did, and just perform like a performing band. And I'm dying to see it. I'm definitely gonna go next time he comes to
the I would love, I would absolutely adore to go and see that. Unfortunately, I live in a part of Scotland where no one comes.
Oh really? Oh, that's too bad.
I live just I don't know if you're familiar too much with Scotland and its geography, but I live in a city called Aberdeen, and you know, we're not the biggest city in the world. So
okay, I have a bunch of friends who live there. I have a very good friend Fiona who lives in Scotland, but not in that area, obviously. But yeah, I'm kind of familiar with Scotland. I've always gotten a lot of love from Scotland, even on the DTKC show, and even now I have a couple of people who wrote us recently from Scotland, listened to the new podcast. So yeah, no, I got a lot of love for Scotland. That's why when I knew you were from Scotland, I was like, oh, of course I'll do the show. So, you know, it's like that puts you right in the thing.
That's what we rely on just around the world. Just be like, yeah, it's fine. We're Scottish. People will be nice to us. but no, you're absolutely right in what you said there. I would absolutely love to go and see that show. I think that would be such an amazing show. As we've sort of talked about, you know, John Carpenter. And you're right as well, you know. John Carpenter was one of these people. He could have gone on and done these humongous, massive movies. You know, he could have gone on and became a Spielberg, or, you know, anyone else really that you could sort of throw out. These are the biggest directors, you know, Peter Jackson and
Martin Scorsese.
Francis Ford Coppola, all these sorts of people. And he didn't, you know, and like you say, he did what he wanted. And I think that's part of the reason why I love him as much as well, is because he didn't go and play that game. He made the things that he wanted to make. And then he kind of got out, you know, like he hasn't obviously directed a huge amount of huge amount over the past couple of decades. I think 2010 was he did The Ward, I think, was the last.
Yeah, I saw The War not too long. I think John is a real maverick, and he's a real like kind of gunslinger, old school director. He doesn't need to work anymore, and I think that's why. Matter of fact, I think John was so disenchanted with the way Hollywood became, and he's a very pretty outspoken guy. You know, great interview too, and he does interviews very open. He does not care who likes it, doesn't like it. It's not like he just says anything off the cuff, but he just will make it clear, you know, he doesn't have to work anymore. He's an older man. He's doing, that's why he does the touring with his son, doing the, you know, greatest hits, so to speak, of his theme movies, because I think he just got fed up with Hollywood. And I watched an interview with him not too long ago, and he just seems like, if I want to work, I'll work. Obviously, you know, he had a hand, obviously, in the latest Halloween kind of stuff, and he only did it because Jamie Lee was involved. He has, him and her are very close. If she wasn't involved, he wouldn't have gotten involved. But I think John is at a stage where he'll work if he wants to, and that's it. And he's not, doesn't need to play the game. And you know, my God, he could have lived off Halloween from years ago.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. He didn't need to make anything else, did he? But he obviously went on to make some amazing things. Halloween, Halloween is my number one favorite of all time movie.
Just brilliant. Brilliance of basic, you know, film and just kind of, again, not big budget and just, it is amazing. It's always been the template, hasn't it, for independent film.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone wants to replicate the success that...
And never really could. And I don't even care about Blair Witch Project and all this other stuff. That you can't even, there's no one even in the ballpark or the stratosphere. Every time someone tries to... But what about this movie? Nope. Halloween still head and shoulders. Friday the 13th Part 1 doesn't hold a candle. I don't care. And I'm a big, like I said, horror fan. But you bet Halloween. It's almost like in wrestling. WWE's number one. Halloween's number one. There's like there could be AEW. I'm like, please, never gonna catch up. The legacy of Halloween is just the original. Is just it'll never be beaten. Let's just put it that. My lifetime or your lifetime. You know what I mean?
No, I agree with you as well. You know, for what it did for horror as well, you know, like you say, so many things have tried to replicate it. And some of these other movies you talk about, like Blair Witch Project, whatever, yeah, of course, they're great success stories for what they did and, you know, and things like that. But in terms of, it's Halloween, you know, so it's never going to be thing. And you're right, one of the things you said earlier was, you know, he's underrated. And, you know, if people, there'll be certain horror fans out there who are maybe listening to this who would say, How is he underrated? He's possibly, you know, the most loved horror director of all time. But that's amongst the horror community, isn't
right,
it?
Right, exactly.
And if
not
you
his
go
peers.
Out with the horror community, because there's so many people out there that don't watch horror films. You know, that's not their cup of tea, or that's fine. But they will be so unfamiliar with John Carpenter's work, and there'll be so many people out there, you'll say, oh, John Carpenter directed this, and they'll probably go to you, who?
Yeah, again, you know, right, anybody listening to this would be like, what are you guys talking about? Halloween, like all big, you know, Escape from New York, Kurt Russell, he had major stars in his movie, what are you talking about? In the annal, amongst, yes, us fans, and amongst the, almost the, you know, this sect of audience, yes, but in the mainstream, you'll have to remind people, John Carpenter, that sounds familiar. What did he do? Halloween. Oh, yeah, Halloween. Besides that, what else did he do? Big Trouble in Little China. Never heard of it. Prince of Darkness. Never heard of it. You have to be like a fan like us to know. You know, he did, right, early 80s. If you're around, you're the age of my age or older, or a little bit younger. You remember all those films because it was big date movies. Everybody went to those movies back then. But amongst his peers, I think John, again, very much a maverick type of guy who did his own thing. I don't think John is buddies with a lot of, you know, where we talked about Scorsese and Coppola are good friends. There's like little cliques of directors who are all buddies. Spielberg is buddies with, I'm sure John knows them, but John never name drops them. I think, matter of fact, John wanted nothing to do with Rob Zombie, you know.
Yes, I remember.
John doesn't care. John's got his friend. He's friends with certain people. He's not a political player. He doesn't need to go out to dinner. I can picture John just hanging out in his house, playing music, listening to 70s rock. That's what I love about John. He's like an old rock and roller, kind of not really. People say he's kind of like a hippie. No, John is not a hippie. John is very much not a hippie. John, I think, is one of those kind of old rock and roll guys who does his own thing. And he's very fascinating to listen to. And anybody who gets a chance, I would say, check out interviews that he does with people, like just off the cuff, talking about life and what he does today and stuff. So that's why I just think he's like one of the, I don't think John Carpenter knows how cool he is to people like us. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he realizes it, you know?
and that's again part, it all combines for him to become this sort of just amazing person, really, doesn't it? And
yeah,
no, I completely agree with you there. Just before we move on, because I'm very aware that we've gone a little off topic, but that's
we tend to do that on our show too.
I wanted to get your opinion. Number one, I don't blame John Carpenter for not really wanting anything to do with Rob Zombie's Halloween movies.
Yeah,
I don't really blame him for that. But I want to just get your opinion briefly on Halloween 2018. What did you think of that? Oh, just quickly.
I liked it. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. People thought I would hate it, and I didn't. I love Jamie Lee Curtis. I think it's hard not to like Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah. I think she's just such, talk about an icon. And John's involvement in it, even if it was just from the score to just a little bit of involvement, it was fine. I wasn't familiar with the directors. I am now. I thought they did a good job. You know, it was a little bit brutal. Some of the scenes were I mean, listen, the days of, what you don't see are over. Now it's what you see and really see. So again, with that bathroom scene was kind of brutal with the guy and the girlfriend and stuff. I like it and stuff, but I'm still about the story and stuff. I don't need unique kills are great, but I also the storyline, and it's got to flow nicely. And I thought it did. The best thing about that movie to me was the scene where the guy and girl were in that guy's yard and the light kept going on and off. Yeah. And when he would get close and close, I thought that was wonderfully shot. And then when she's running down the, and again, the score, the music that they had for that, it was just very good suspension buildup. I liked it. I liked the ending. And from what I see from the trailers, and my God, how I anticipated is this movie finally coming out this year after COVID. I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, I like not as good as Halloween 1978, but I'll take it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. I'm same as you though. Not quite as good as 78 for me. But that'll never be beaten in my opinion. Yeah, for me, it was, I loved it. It just brought the brutality back to the character of Michael Myers. You know, we'd had Six and H2O and Resurrection and all of those just, for lack of a better word, awful movies.
again, you know, bring it back. You know, sometimes you can't catch lightning in a bottle, and sometimes you can't, you know, bring it back to what it used to be. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, everything's got to come to an end. Everything changes. Sometimes it's for the better, sometimes it's for the worse, sometimes you're just indifferent to change. But again, the wonderful thing is you can always go back and watch the first one and appreciate it. Take the new one for what it is, but you can always go back in time anytime you want and love the original, which most people do.
Yeah, exactly. So, Christine.
There you go. Well, you know, played in John Carpenter has something. Like, we're staying in the wheelhouse because that's something.
Yeah, absolutely, you know, absolutely. Yeah. So, you'd obviously mentioned to me earlier that you saw this in the theaters when it first came out. So, do you remember how highly anticipated was this movie when it came out?
Well, you know, I remember going on dates. I was 15. I took a date to the movie. I went with my friend Rob. I think him too. My friend John as well too. I think it was like three guys, three girls. I'm pretty sure. Because I remember we also that year we saw Vacation together with the same crew of people that summer. The original Chevy Chase movie Vacation came out that July of '83. So '83 was a big movie year for us. Flashdance and all these other things. So we thank God a horror movie was coming out because we saw a lot of comedies and teen sex movies and stuff like about Porky's. And I remember I was just happy to see a horror movie because I was the real horror guy in our little crew of friends that we hung around. So as a matter of fact, I remember just really aggressively saying that weekend we were going to, but we're going to see Christine. I'm going, you guys go wherever you want to go. I'm going to see Christine. So I got my way, thank God. And cause you know, usually one friend will pick them cause I think we saw Staying Alive that year, the remake to the follow up to Saturday Night Fever, which was horrible. So again, I think I was, that was in October of that. Again, I have a great memory. Staying Alive was one of the worst things I ever saw. So I told my friends I'd pick movie from now on. So we went to see Christine. And I remember it was pretty crowded. Again, the trailers caught, and my friends were all into classic cars. You know, we're of that age where people are getting their learner's permit, 15, 16, wanting to drive. So cool cars were, you know, an easy catch for a teenage boy. But also, like I said, John Carpenter directed it. I went with this group, The Escape from New York, and all the Fog and stuff in the early 80s. John Carpenter was an IT director then. So all that stuff, it wasn't a big hard sell. I remember we went on a Friday night, first night it was released. And now I'm seeing here, it was December 9th, 1983. That's what I remember. It was a couple of weeks before Christmas. And remember just got a good seat. And I pay real attention when I'm at the movies. I hate anybody trying to distract me. And I just remember it being a pretty good turnout, good crowd. Again, when we left the theater, I remember we were in the debate about the car. Obviously, the car was the talk of the movie and stuff because it was so unique. And we had never seen anything like that. And if you remember, you know, 80s nostalgia. Not too long after that or around that time, there was a TV show called Knight Rider that came out with a talking Trans Am car named Kit. So like car, again, talking cars and killer cars. There was a movie called The Car that was in the late 70s about a satanically possessed car with James Brolin. We had seen that as young kids. So that we were comparing it to the movie The Car in a little ways. I remember going to the diner and talking about it. But I think, you know, we all loved it. We all thought it was great. And again, when I talk about the memorable scene, the car on fire going down the highway chasing Buddy, was one thing that really stuck with us in that. And it's still to this day, when I see that scene, I remember me and my friends talking about it. Overall, good review. I remember we all loved it. And when years later, when it came out on VHS, I bought the VHS. Then when DVDs came out, I got the DVD. Blu-ray, everything that came out on Christine over the years that was released in format, I bought. So again, it's one of my favorites. So when you told me that could be one of the topics we talk about, I was totally psyched for it. But it was, I remember loving it, and I didn't go back and see it again in theaters, but when 6 months later, when it became a rental on in video stores, I rented it 20 times probably, maybe 25 times between 1984 and 1986. I must have watched it, you know, 30 times. And then, of course, it's always on cable and stuff. Honestly, Ian, altogether, I've probably seen Christine in its full length about 50 times. No joke.
So there's nothing I can tell you about this movie that you're not already going to know. It's really funny that you say that because Christine is, it's on Netflix here now. But when I was growing up, and obviously growing up through the sort of 90s and early 2000s, this just was a movie that I was not aware of. Like it was never on TV here. I never saw it, you know, on sale at VHS stores or DVD stores or anything like that. I was just completely unaware of this movie. And it was only because as my sort of horror fandom, if you will, grew in my sort of mid to late teens, And obviously, at that point, I was really sort of forming my love of people like, you know, John Carpenter and Wes right. Craven and all these sorts of people that, you know, I was sort of starting to go through their back catalogues of movies and things like that. And it was only really then that I sort of became aware of Christine. So it was... It's just odd how differently certain movies are played, you know, even just to the UK, which is maybe not seen as being that like massively different. Obviously, we're two massively different countries, the US and the UK. But in terms right. of, you know, we're the sort of two biggest English speaking countries in the world, aren't we? So it's just it's so interesting to see how different, you know, that played out in the States compared to over here, especially. You know, when I was growing up, obviously, you know, when I was growing up, we're talking a decade after the movie came out. So that obviously will have something to do with it as well, probably. But
yeah, I was going to ask you. Yeah. Now you explained it, like how you got to hear about Christine, because, again, it was and we could talk about, you know, it made money. It was considered a moderate hit. You know, I think it was like a budget of 10 million and probably made like double that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and people say, you know, 21 million. Yeah. If you're looking in terms of today and Marvel motion picture revenue and stuff. Yeah. 21. And people have to remember, too, back then tickets were $5 here in the States for movies. I remember that's why it was easy for me at 15 with no job and just basically depending on money from my parents. So I got a job when I was 16. My dad would give me $20 a week in like allowance. I'd wash his car, or I'd vacuum the house, or I'd do things around the house, and he'd give me $20 a week.
Yeah.
So I can go on a date and go to the diner afterwards and have change left over, because it was $5 tickets each. So it was that was the norm back then. So yeah, 21 million in revenue overall back then is considered good, you know,
I consider any movie that's doubled its budget to be a moderate
profit
success.
It's all about profit. But I think people look at terms of, again, if you're an 18-year-old looking at that today, go, oh, that doesn't seem like a lot of money, because the cost of most, you know, 21 million even for a budget is low today.
Endgame was that 300 million or something for budget?
I mean, when you think about it, The Rock gets 20 million a picture. So right there, The Rock would get everything that Carpenter pulled in for Christine, like on his own. So if you think of it in terms of that, but again, I think people forget 1983 is nearly, and it was made, you know, filmed in 82, nearly 40 years ago, 39 mm-hmm. years ago, this movie was made. It's a long time. And again, the value of a dollar, you know, you can just look it up and say, if this was such and such, how much would it be today in the States? And again, it's a vast difference of money and spending and, you know, how much budgets cost and you know, really how you can. And Carpenter's, you know, Ian, got a lot of stuff done without overstaffing his crew. He was very, very, I wouldn't say guerrilla, you know, style, or like real underground, like just a couple of people, just a couple of stagehands. But he didn't spend money where he spent money on the movie, not on staffing. You know, like he basically, everyone had a lot of different jobs. If you work with John Carpenter, you wore a lot of hats. You know what I mean? If you were John Carpenter's crew, I learned about John, is that he didn't need over the top, you know, 100 people. If he can do it with 50 people, if he could do it with 10 people, he would do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And get the job done. So it's about budgeting and stuff. But yeah, tickets were only $5 back then. So
yeah. And I think as well, when you look at it, you know, John Carpenter, he wasn't guaranteed success at the box office, wasn't he? Because you look at movies like The Thing, which bombed, for lack of a better word,
when you think about it did not do well. And a lot of his movies, Memoirs of an Invisible Man and Prince of Darkness, I remember going to see in 87, there was nobody there, dude. I mean, it was that me and my friend Rob were like, why is nobody here? It's John Carpenter. And honestly, when I saw They Live in the theaters, John Carpenter didn't have a good time. 86, 87, 88. All of his movies were kind of not doing well. I think that's when John took a little bit of a dip. But They Live in Prince of Darkness, I could have had a baseball game in the movie theater and I wouldn't have hit anybody with the ball. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, I mean, after they did in 88, and it was 4 years until Memoirs of an Invisible Man, and then another couple of years after that until he did In the Mouth of Madness. So, there, you know, and up until that point, you know, he was releasing something almost every single year, wasn't he? You know, he did the Halloween, Assault and Precinct in 76, Halloween 78, Fog in 80, New York in 81, Thing 82, Christine 83, you know, so he was really consistent. And then suddenly, you know, that sort of, he took that break, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think also then when John's films weren't making any money anymore, that's when he stopped getting, if you notice, the Kurt Russell stayed loyal to him, but the big actors weren't exactly clamoring to be, you know, Chevy Chase was on his way down in Memoirs of an Invisible Man. Daryl Hannah was looking for work at that point because she was an 80s girl in the early 90s. They were doing nothing. Chase was going on. So Carpenter kind of, you know, was a rescuer of actors who were kind of on their last legs. The only real IT actor that stuck with John and obviously did Escape from L.A. with him was Kurt Russell, because Kurt and John are really good friends in real life. And Kurt Russell's a real loyalist when it comes to directors. But yeah, again, without getting too off topic, but Christine, as far as that goes, like I said, it was considered a hit. I remember it got, and I remember the critics giving it great reviews. I remember Siskel and Ebert and Rex Reed, who's a big New York reviewer here. He was a big name guy. Rex Reed in New York was kind of like the Siskel and Ebert in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they all liked Christine. They gave it a good rating and stuff. And it was got, what was not to like? I really would be surprised even going back and watching it. I can always find reasons for critics to not like certain movies, like Friday the 13th, part 3. I can understand why critics would think that was crap, but Christine was good acting, good storytelling, compelling, suspenseful. It had some names in there: Harry Dean Stanton, Robert Prosky, actors people respected. It had a good score. What's to give a bad review to? So again, I can admit when something gets a bad review, and I think also the critics were on board with being a fan of Carpenter already. Carpenter was a critic's favorite to a degree, because even The Thing, it didn't do good. It bombed to a degree. It wasn't like, you know, Police Academy 5. Oh, yeah. It didn't bomb. but you're right. The thing in rentals and in over the years made up the money. Let's put it this way, that they think they kind of lost in the film. But Christine, I think there was nothing to dislike about it. Matter of fact, if I see a negative review, I definitely want to check it out. I got to like look for that and see if anybody gave it a bad review.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, you touched on it there. You could go through the best movies in the world, and if you go through it with a total fine tooth comb, you will find little things that you think, that could have been done better, or that could have been done better. And I'm sure if you was to sit and go through this movie, you know, with under a proper proper lens, like we could find things as well. But you listed all the different things. You know, the effects are great in this movie. You know, the acting is really good, the score is fantastic, all of those things. And yeah, like there's nothing here that I would sit here and say, oh, that's just, you know, a horrendous movie. We've covered some bad movies on this podcast before. You know, you're talking, we've covered things like, you know, Birdemic and Troll 2 and
Troll 2. Oh my God, Troll 2. Jeez. And I'm sorry I missed that one.
We'll do it again just for you. It's fine.
yeah, but again, listen, there's some critic out there who probably said Led Zeppelin, they suck. You know what I'm saying? Right? There's someone out there who's Black Sabbath. Ugh. You know, like, but right, you can find something that, you know, there were even people, believe it or not, and there were even people who hated the Don Tony Kevin Castle show. But
I can't imagine.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, don't worry, I've seen those people.
Oh yeah, exactly. So again, you could find anybody to like. Again, you know, when I used to remember, I'm the biggest old Van Halen fan, and people would have a reason I hate it. You know, like, you know, garbage music, and it's just like, okay, you know, and I think, let's be honest, you know, a lot of critics go in jaded. It's almost like, you know, to be a critic, you know, they claim fair and balanced, but really what they are is slighted and jaded, and they have their preferences and the stuff they don't like. So again, it's in the eye of the beholder, as you know, Ian. I mean, I'm sure with your co-hosts. I mean, I've tried to listen to some back episodes of you guys, and I really enjoy the show, by the way. And I'm definitely going to go back and listen to that Troll 2 episode. But, you know, I'm sure you guys have, let's call them, passionate debates about your differences of opinion on movie. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Right now, because there's a long-running thing between me and one of my sort of semi-regular co-host, Nico, and we have really massive debates about the new Child's Play movie and also Doctor Sleep. That's the sort of two movies we're kind of butting heads over just now. But over the course of the podcast's life, you know, exactly, everyone has their own particular passions, everyone has their own favorites, and no one likes to see their own favorites being bashed and all that, and people will defend their movies, and yeah, like, the critics, it's difficult, isn't it, to rate or review or talk about anything if you don't like it, you know, or if you have something that maybe will go against it, or if you just have a preference that you don't like horror movies or whatever. It's going to be difficult for you to then sit in a room, watch a horror movie, and then write a positive review about
it. It's true. And for the record, I'm a big fan of the new Child's Play. I liked it. And I like Dr. Yes. Sleep. I like Dr. Sleep. I'm a big fan of Mike Flanagan, the director of Dr. Sleep, and a bunch of other movies that he did. Hush, which mm-hmm. is one of my favorite slasher films. I thought Hush was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant home invasion movie. Mike Flanagan is, I'm going to say he's my new John Carpenter, but Mike is definitely a director who anything Mike puts out, I'm going to check it out. So he's done a lot of, I'm sure you reviewed a bunch of his films. I Child's Play I like too, but without getting off that, I was a big fan. And my co-host, by the way, refused to see Child's Play. So we're going to have a hard time doing the Child's Play remake, as you heard on my other show last week. If you listen to it, she refused to see Jackie Earle Haley as the new Freddy Krueger, which I gave Jackie a good review. Now, listen, Robert Englund is the guy, but yeah. I'm open to giving good actors a chance to mm-hmm. to show me what they got. So again, I'll see remakes, by the way. And if they remade Christine, I would see it, and I would, you know, probably I don't go in hating anything, but yeah. If I don't like it, I'll make it very known that I didn't like it. But I matter of fact, I don't know if that was even a question you were going to ask. If they remake Christine, could that movie fly today? Could they do it today? Of course they could. I would hope not rely on CGI, because obviously, look, in 82, they pulled off a killer car movie. Listen, in 1977, they pulled off a killer car movie with the car with James Brolin. I mean, brilliant. They don't need CGI for a car movie, but I'm not sure. And I'm kind of surprised, to be honest with you, unless you've heard something. Have you ever heard a scuttlebutt about a remake?
I've never heard anything about a Christine remake. And you're, you know, you hear these things that you sort of get rumored all the time. And Christine's just a name that's never sort of popped into my sphere. Maybe I've just missed it. You know, like it's an absolute possibility. And, you know, we're going through a massive Stephen King renaissance just now, aren't we, as well, in terms his stories being remade. So it wouldn't surprise me if Mike Flanagan was going to direct.
Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? You'll be the first call I make when I hear about it.
That's perfect. Hey. That's fine.
we predicted it. We'll give ourselves credit on the
absolutely,
podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone, I'll write that trademark behind the Screams podcast.
There you go.
but no, yeah, like, it's... I don't hate remakes either, and there are people out there who hate remakes purely for existing, don't they? You know, you just get these sorts of people who's just like, oh, it's a remake. Hollywood's run out of ideas. That's the one that always gets brought up, isn't it? Ran out of ideas, and that argument just does not fly with me whatsoever, because they've been remaking movies since the 1920s, the 1930s, probably even earlier. You know, they've been remaking movies for a century. So the whole idea that Hollywood has run out of ideas, no, we're bringing these movies to a new generation of people. I personally was not a massive fan of the new Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake, but possibly my favorite aspect of that movie was Jackie Earle Haley's performance. I thought he did a really good job.
He did, yeah.
Like you say, Robert Englund's the man. He is Freddy Krueger. He will always be Freddy Krueger. Much like Halloween will never be topped as that sort of movie, isn't it? But no, I thought Jackie Earle Haley did a good job. I kind of like the direction they took the movie in. But in the end, overall, I didn't think it was that great a movie. I actually really like the Friday the 13th remake. It's the best movie of all time, but I think that's a pretty solid movie.
Absolutely. Me and my co-host agree on that. The Friday the 13th remake, where they made Jason almost a survivalist in the wilderness, where he was, you know, again, and fun, there's not people who are deformed wearing a hockey mask, but there are survivalists out there in wooded areas that man does not go to. And if they do, sometimes they even say people who disappear. They like to blame it here in the States on Bigfoot, but I think, you know, outside of Bigfoot, I think that some people might stumble upon some people living out in an area that they didn't want anybody to know about, and sometimes people disappear. So you wonder, like, oh, that could happen, you know. But I like the survivalist aspect of the fact that he'd be underground tunnels, because people are like, Jason is supposed to be supernatural. I'm like, he's not. He's supposed to be whatever the director's imagination makes him to be, and you're either on board with it or you're not. I always find it interesting. Like, getting back to Christine, we could talk about, was Christine the embodiment of Satan? Was it an entity? Yeah. Was it a spirit? Was it not? Is it not? Why do we always go to, like, an interesting thing? I can make this point to you. Why do we always go in the Satan aspect when it comes to things like this, right? The devil. Because what was it really in Christine? Did we really know what it was? Was it an entity? Was it the spirit of a trapped soul, someone who died in the car? Was it someone who was it a human element? From the deaths in the car, like a bunch of lost souls, or was it the devil? I really never understood. And to this day, Ian, I'll be honest with you, despite even Stephen King explaining it, I still don't know if I even buy it.
Well, that's,
you know what I'm saying?
That's the thing about this movie as well. It does leave a lot to interpretation, doesn't it? I think in the novel, I've not read Christine. Much like you in that I tended to not really. I've read a few of Stephen King's works now, but I haven't read a lot over the last sort of wee while. But I believe we know it's a spirit. It's a spirit of a deceased man who is taking control of Christine, I think, off the top of my head, but I could be mistaken in that.
I believe you're correct, but again, I think even still the narrative, and if you ask anybody, oh, the satanic car, like, people will actually say that to this day. It's like, oh, is that the car that was something like the devil? I was like, well, that the movie The Car was that, 1977. I don't think Christine was ever, I don't think anybody even, I don't even think, if you remember, Ian, in the movie, that when John Stockwell was talking to Arnie's girlfriend, they were plotting to destroy Christine, the car itself. No, they never brought up, I think this car's possessed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's Satan. I think it's the devil. You know, like, there was no religious element brought up. As a matter of fact, I don't even remember them. They would just say, I think it's the car. Like,
yeah,
remember the way
it.
They talk? But they didn't, like, you never heard the Alexandra Paul was her name, the actress.
Yes.
And John Stockwell say, what could this, like, what, the thing that bothered me is they never examined how could a car do this? What is happening here? And all they would say is that it's that car is bad. That's all they would say.
they just accept it.
Exactly.
That's an everyday thing upon it.
Yeah. So yeah. Didn't you find it interesting that like there wasn't a scene, maybe a cutting room floor scene where they're in the library talking, like,
yeah,
you know, I think, call me crazy, I think that this car is possessed.
Yeah.
But no one ever used that word. I thought it was weird.
It's, I mean, you'll know as a big fan of horror movies, you know, how many horror movies have you seen that has that exact scene? Someone's in a library,
right?
Or in modern times, it's Google, they're Googling, you know, like, but
yep.
How many movies have that scene of exposition where they're finding out what it is, they're reading a book, they're going online, they're finding out, and that just doesn't happen here. At all. Like you say, they don't even mention it. No one at any point of the movie says, well, what's going on with this car? They just say, oh, it's his car. And that's the end of the story. it's bizarre. But I don't know, like, I mean, in terms of the plot, it's obviously a bit of a hole in terms of, we obviously don't know. And John Carpenter, obviously we have the windshield and things is blacked out when Christine is, you know, doing the killings and all those things, and that was to obviously hide the stunt people who were in the car. But it did sort of lead to this whole sort of theory that, well, do we know if it's actually Christine that's doing it? Do we know if it's Arnie that's inside the car? There's a couple of things in this movie that would lean you away from that one, because obviously, you know, there's the scene where the car is on fire, we see the inside, it's all burnt out. But there's those sorts of theories that fly around as well amongst us who are watching it. But that never, ever appears in the movie. And it almost makes this movie kind of unique in that way.
Yeah, it's true. It does. It definitely does. But I always wondered, did they ever have a scene where they like got together and they're trying to figure out how do we kill this thing? It was just, we'll just beat the car down. We'll smash it. We'll break it. We'll make it impossible for Arnie to drive it. So I just thought, again, it just, you know, I think about, I guess I'm, my mind just works that way. It just kind of goes off in a why this, why that. But it doesn't ruin the experience for me, where other people get all frazzled about the what's and the whys aren't defined or answered for them in a film. It reminds me of, you remember, you know, I'm not sure if you watch, but you know about it, of course, as a famous show. The way The Sopranos ended with fading to black.
Yeah.
Everyone's so, that sucked. It's up to interpretation, and there's nothing wrong with leaving things up to interpretation. I think it's good storytelling, just like in wrestling. You know, oh, the story, I don't get this. Again, you got to like think about it. Don't let entertainment frazzle you. Mm-hmm. That's what I always feel that way. It's like I never walked out of a movie. I'm just a different type of a guy. I never like, you know, I kind of just accept things. And if I like it, I like it. If I don't, I don't. It doesn't ruin my day if I didn't like the way Christine ended. You know what I mean?
I think that's the best way to go about it. You know, like, you know, you've probably gathered I'm the biggest Halloween fan in the world. But if I'd gone in, you know, a few years ago to see Halloween Kills and it was, you know, a steaming pile of shit, and I walked out, I'd have been disappointed, of course, but I'd have, like you say, it wouldn't have ruined my day or my week or anything.
Exactly.
And there are these people who will go out and be, they'll get so angry, and you know, they get so mad, and then you know, and then they go on to social media and become not very nice people to each other, and it's all just a big vicious circle in 2021.
Exactly.
I think what I like about this movie, it doesn't, even though, like we say, we sort of touched upon earlier, you know, it deals with themes of bullying and all those sorts of things. The movie doesn't take itself too seriously at all, does it? You know, there are lots of nudge-nudge, wink-wink moments in the movie. There's lots of jokes in there. Yeah, even right at the end, when they've got Christine cubed, you know, they've cubed her, that she's gone into the crusher or whatever it's called, and they hear the radio playing, you know, and it turns out that it's just the guy that works there, the yard worker, walking with his radio.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, that was great.
And then the character, I can't remember her name, her character name, she just goes, I hate rock and roll, you know? And, you know, so I like the fact that the movie doesn't take itself too seriously as well. I think sometimes that certain movies can maybe think itself almost above its station. That's a horrible turn of phrase. I don't really like it, but you know what I'm sort of saying? Like, you know, a lot of horror movies are a little bit like that. They should be a little bit like that. A little bit nudge, nudge, wink, wink, have a few jokes in there and make, cause that's life, you know, even these horrific things are happening, funny stuff still happens, you know?
I always think there's, I use humor a lot when it comes to, if you ever see me on Twitter, I go for laughs more than I go for anything like serious. But I think that's the whole thing. I think that people, movies to me, and movies like Christine and horror movies, much like wrestling, much like anything else that you're into, for me, is an escapism from the bullshit, from being frustrated, from stress or whatever. So I don't allow that kind of stuff to enter my escapism entertainment aspect of my life. Because again, as I told you in the beginning of the show, a passion of mine is movies and stuff. That's stuff I see and I don't like or whatever, but you're right, you move on with your day. But and stuff I go back, and to be honest with you, is I almost find comforting during, truth be told, during COVID, I'm in the nightclub industry for about 28 years, and it's been closed. I'm still not back to work yet, by the way. New York will probably officially fully open in July, after July, so I've got two more months to go. I figured I held out, you know, 14 months, two more months ain't going to kill me. I mean, almost did, but a thing that got me through it, honestly, was horror films, suspense, thriller, you know, kind of throwback movies and stuff, because we obviously, I'm sure over there in Scotland too, we had a lot of couch time over the months, and some still have it. Like I said, here in New York, we're not fully open yet, but so I got to a lot, you know, people talk about Netflix and stuff, and yeah, I did watch stuff on those streaming services, but I went back and watched my DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff of the Christines and the movies like Firestarter, which is another Stephen King movie, and a lot of throwback films. And matter of fact, we just talked about it before. I watched the new Friday the 13th again. And again, it was an escapism for me. And it's just something that kind of soothes me or calms me. So again, stuff like this, I find kind of positive escapism. And anybody who uses it to lash out or get frustrated. I don't get that. It's that's not what it's for. I think they're missing the point.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's missing the point. You know, it's like, I just watch. Oh, damn, I'm so mad. And I always like say, dude, what are you mad about? It's like 2 hours of my time I'll never get back. I'm like, what were you going to be doing anyway? Exactly.
No, I completely agree with it. And it actually sounds like we've been living a very similar life since COVID, because I don't know if you're aware, but I'm a bartender. That's my trade by night. And we're much like you. We're still not back to work. You know, we're still closed. And I think we're planning on pretty much fully opening around July, August time as well.
Yeah, so they're saying for almost everybody, and knock on wood, good luck to everybody on that who's in the, because again, in a lateral way, you're a similar profession of mine, because I'm in the nightclub business. Mm-hmm. We're booking live entertainment and bands. So yeah, bartending, you're right in my wheelhouse. Some of my best friends are bartenders who I've worked with for many, many years. And the same thing, we're all clamoring. And matter of fact, the staff and we were interacting. Any good movies you could recommend? Like I remember it used to be, Kev, who's playing next week? And now it was like, hey, any good movies we can watch?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, like, that's,
yeah. So bartenders, yeah, again, you guys have been so affected by this, and if you used your downtime, let's call it, to do what you did and I did, which was watch, and of course you sunk yourself, I'm sure, into the podcast very much.
Oh, massively.
Yeah, so that's again another form of escapism. And listen, if you can eke out making some money from it, or making half a living, let alone a living, that's pretty good too. Because the first bunch of years in podcasting, I never made a dime or a dollar until a few years ago, until we got really known and got in Rolling Stone magazine and got on the map. Me and Anthony did it for fun. I mean, basically for many years. And again, podcasting, my God, it's such an overcrowded field now. And the way you can only make yourself stand out. And by the way, I'm being on the show with you. I'm loving what I'm hearing. I feel great about being on the show because you have such a great and inviting and welcoming, friendly attitude. Because I've been on podcasts where, again, it seems like you don't want to. You're not even enjoying the topics you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that you are. You have just a tone of positivity about stuff, and you have the right attitude. So I'll be honest with you. It's probably one that I've done about. You know, and maybe some other people won't like me saying this, but I'm not going to. I enjoyed all my experience. I did about 15 guest spots on different podcasts since COVID started in the last year, because mm-hmm. I had a time to do it. This is actually one of my, maybe even my favorite interaction I've had on another podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, credit to you. And because I'm the same way. If you heard my show, Chicky, it's, I want to have fun. I don't want to, like, this downtrodden, you know, everything sucks and this sucks and that sucked. And, you know, this was a good time and everything else is terrible. I think you get just too much from that. I think, and again, if anybody's going to listen to this, I think at least they'll walk away and say, those two guys seem to enjoy the show and have fun.
That's so
you want to listen to.
It's so important to have fun when you're doing things like this as well. And listen, don't get me wrong. We've done movies that we hate, you know.
And like you said earlier,
you know, if you dislike a movie, you make it known that you dislike a movie. And we have definitely done loads of movies that we hate. But doing things like this, doing podcasts, and you're right, when COVID hit here, I had only been podcasting for about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
So we were still like baby fresh out of the box, and I sunk all my time, because I wasn't working. I suddenly had all right. of this free time on my hands, and I was sitting there going, what am I going to do with myself, you know, because you'll know yourself working in nightclubs, because it's a nightclub though where I do bartending, you know, everything is so fast paced, and you know, yep. you're constantly on the go, you're constantly speaking to people, even as a bartender, you know, like, you know, you're it's just go all the time, and then you go home and you rest. And then you get back up and do it all over again. Exactly. So suddenly to have all this free time in my hands, I was just like, what am I going to do with myself? And, you know, we were brand new out the box. So we had no one listening to us at that point. And then I just threw all my spare time into this. It's a passion project. It's something that I was really passionate about. Horror movies is something. I watched my first horror movie when I was 6 years old. So, you know, even though I'm not the oldest head that's kicking about these days, you know, I've been watching horror movies for almost two and a half decades, so I feel like I kind of know what I'm talking about. Everyone else is on this show, whether that's Lindsay or Lucy or Nico or whatever, these are all just my friends, you know. Me, Lindsay, and Lucy have known each other for well over a decade. And Dave, who sometimes does spots on the podcast, we've known each other for over a decade. I've worked with Nico. He's actually one of the DJs at the club that I work at. So he also has been pretty badly affected by what's been going on. So we sort of bonded a little bit over that as well. And I think that comes across, doesn't it, to people who's listening to it. You know, if you're listening to a show and the people, you can tell whether or not the hosts are having fun or not, can't you? And I'm sure you've listened to plenty of podcasts where you've listened to it and you've thought, do these guys even like what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten that even on certain podcasts I've been on. Other ones, it even sounded like, oh, this guy's positive. I thought he was going to come on and truth be told. I mean, me and Anthony, my old partner, I mean, we did about 700 shows together over mm-hmm. the years. I mean, since, like I said, we go back to 2007, before it was even called podcasting. So we were kind of in on this whole new wave of stuff. And we were very shy, you know, very Howard Sternish, I would say, in the early days, and very, not negative, but just saying some outrageous shit. Crazy stuff. And it was very Opie and Anthony, Howard Stern kind of stuff. That was the move back then. We weren't trying to copy anybody. We were just being ourselves. But again, you get old. It's true. And there's no escaping it. As you get older, you do. And I won't even say mature, but you change and you evolve, I guess, is the best way to say it. Some people might say, some people evolve into being like boring or more conservative or whatever. But not again, I just think as long as you keep your humor, I've never lost the humor aspect and kind of the ha-ha side of stuff, because I'm always down, and me and Carolyn, my co-host on the new show, we have a good time, and you could tell that we're friends. And even some of the shows I listen to of you guys, I could tell. I was going to ask you that, and you answered my question, how do you know the other co-hosts? And you said you're friends outside of this. You could tell. I was listening to some of your podcasts, and you could tell you guys are friends. You could tell. which is a good thing, because it's much better than the opposite of being there again. And that's really what was the downfall of my podcast. It was, in the end, it was a disconnect, because we weren't real life friends. We didn't hang out and stuff. We were in business together. And I think I said my next project I'm going to do is going to be with someone who's real life friend, really knows me. He's been in my home. I've been in theirs. We've been on car trips together. That's my new host now. My former co-host, as long as we were together, we weren't those type of guys. There was no particular reason for it. We just lived two different lives.
Yeah, and that happens, kind of drifted apart.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, exactly. It's no, like, to me, no real animosity in there, not on my part at all. But, again, I think that when I listen to a podcast, I like hearing that kind of stuff. And I like a good mad rant myself too. I can rant myself. I love it, because if it's warranted and if it's genuine, not if you're putting on an act to get things to say, controversial things to get hits, that I don't like. And I could tell if someone's being disingenuous. But if you really, you know, like, say you go see new Halloween, we haven't seen it yet, and you're really passionately disappointed and you express why and stuff, I'm all in on listening to your opinion and stuff. I'm not just going to dismiss it because he's hating it just to hate it. But again, you can tell, I think, when someone's genuine. That's why, again, your podcast, you said yourself, you started out with nothing. You're building your fan base. It takes a long time to build the foundation of a fan base, as you know. I'm fortunate enough to, again, have a little bit of a name. My podcast partner is kind of a Twitter social media celebrity stuff. She has almost like 100,000 followers on her own. So she brings a lot to the table. So again, you know, there's other people who start out from grassroots, but I remember starting out too and having, you know, years ago in the early 2000s on hotlines, and maybe 10 people called that hotline. You got to build up a foundation. But again, if you're enjoying yourself, people will enjoy it. My best advice, Steven, if my advice means anything, would be for you guys to keep doing what you're doing. And even once you go back to work, as long as this is a thing that you guys, by the way, this is a continued thing that you guys are all in, even when you guys are all back to work full time, correct?
Yes. We've got plans. We are, our full schedule in terms of movie topics that we're going to, the three of us are going to be talking about, is right up until the end of this year and then beyond. So this isn't going anywhere. We're going to be making a couple of changes to certain things and just, you know, tweaking things here and there. And that's what podcasting is about as well.
Absolutely.
You know, it's so much trial and error, isn't it? Like, you try something. If it works, that's great. You keep it going. If it doesn't work, okay, then we'll go back to how things was before. And so we've got a few things that we're going to be trying out and things here and there. But you're right. You know, it's so difficult. podcasting is a very, very saturated thing, and you'll know that being a wrestler podcast. I mean, there's so many wrestling podcasts.
That's why. I mean, and I'm probably still going to do another wrestling podcast down the road with another network, so to speak, with a pretty known one. I might even have an announcement coming up soon. But right now, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing with this other podcast. And when I go back to, matter of fact, the fear of my new co-hosts and new projects I'm in is like, but when the clubs open up again, are you gonna have time to do this, Kev? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I have the time. Don't worry about it. I'm all in. I'm not, but that was the one big thing about everyone. It was like, when the club, you know, because you're gonna be pretty busy, right? I go, I am, and I'm not. I don't also know how the landscape of my industry is gonna change. With touring bands, I book a lot of touring bands out of country, out of state bands. The sanctions are being lifted little by little, but I don't know if people are going to come out right away, or we're going to have dead shows. We're going to have 20, 30 people in the house, even though we're allowed to have a couple of hundred. Are people going to come out? Are we going to be able to pay the sound man the same salary anymore? Are we taking a cut in pay when we go back? But even the club owners talk to me. He goes, Kevin, I got to be honest. I don't know. I want to think everything goes back to normal, finger quotes, but I don't know.
That's it. We're exactly the same. You know, when we're the same as you, we're opening up little by little. And in six weeks time, I think, around here, you know, we'll be allowed to have 100 people in a venue. And, you know, the venue that I work in holds over almost 1500. So at that point,
you're working in a big venue. Okay.
So at that point, we're like, it's really not worth us even opening our doors. So they won't open their doors. And, you know, so we really need to wait until everything opens up again. And then you're right as well. You don't know how many people's going to be rushing out to come and stand in a sweaty dance floor. And
is your place a live music, a dance place, or bands?
So we're mainly, you know, DJs and you know, dancing and things like that, but we do occasionally from time to time have the odd live band playing here and there. But yeah, we're mostly an 80s and 90s retro venue. It's called a venue. I feel bad saying that.
Oh no, my podcast partner Karen would love it. I think if we ever go to around your way, we'll come visit you there, because that's she's into those. There used to be Manhattan nightclubs here that were very 80s and 90s, especially 80s. There was a big 80s one. I can't remember the name of it, but she used to go there frequently. So again, that's right up our alley. Again, and just as a bartender, you depend on tips, and you could kind of estimate how much you're gonna make. And going back, you don't know if people are gonna be frugal with their money and not tip as well anymore.
That's the thing. We don't even know if people are gonna be overly happy with using money. You know,
don't know. It's just because when people, and I'm sure you get this too, but you'll be happy to go back. We're happy to go back, but we're still in the unknown. It's almost like we're in our own movie. We don't know what's gonna happen.
Definitely. You know, working behind a bar, it's not a particularly well-paying job, and I'm sure it's similar over where you are. Bartending is not
shift pay is very basic, and you depend on tips.
Absolutely. I'm fortunate where I work that my fiance is one of my bosses, so nepotism going on whatsoever. But I am lucky in that sense as well. So you know, I tend to get maybe first choice at some of the extra chefs that are going.
Matter of fact, let me write this down. When I go back to work, date one of the female club. let me write that down. I mean, funny enough, I've never actually been involved with anybody in my industry at work. I've always dated outside of it, for some reason I have this affinity for dating school teachers. my long-term relationships have been with teachers, no joke. And they liked metal and rock, but they weren't from the venue or the club scene I was from and stuff. So I was always dating, and it just worked out that way. But it's funny, but I do work for, ironically, a popular club here in New York called Lucky 13, which is the IT club, metal and rock. It's a small place, but you've probably heard of the famous CBGBs from New York. It was a famous club with the Ramones and Blondie and all these famous bands came from. Lucky 13 is more of like a local band haven, but the owner, the two owners are divorced husband and wife. So it's kind of funny. They get along still in business and they're married to other people now. So it's crazy, you know? So it's that, I don't know what that is, but again, it's just, you know, in the nightclub business, it's strange bedfellows, you know what I mean?
There's a lot. I've never worked in an industry like it.
It's very,
you know, people say, oh, this really weird thing happened to me at work today. And I'll just be like, well, I bet it wasn't as weird as what I saw last night.
Right, you know? Exactly. See, we segueing back into Christine. If you thought the whole Christine storyline was weird, the nightclub business is just as odd. But we're not possessed by any spirit. Maybe some club owners I know are possessed by the devil, but I'm not sure.
I know a few of them as well. Yeah, there you go. Okay, right. Before we move on, is there anything else about Christine that you feel like we should bring up that we maybe haven't covered yet? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Let me see. Well, again, I think it's one of the more underappreciated movies, classics. I wouldn't say, you know, when I think of Stephen King movies, and quite honestly, this Stephen King movies, a lot of people think of Pet Sematary, mm-hmm. I think, when they think of the, it got remade, as you know, didn't like the remake, by the way.
Nope, same.
Maximum Overdrive, going to Stephen King, Firestarter, Cujo, Silver Bullet, which was a great underappreciated werewolf movie that mm-hmm. Stephen King did. When you go in the annals of history, Stephen King movies have never been top box office. Like it was like a Die Hard opening or something, you know, like it always finished in like the top five, top 10 or whatever. What was the one? Graveyard Shift, another underappreciated, the giant rats movie. That was a gross movie, by the way. Really gross. If you want to be grossed out, watch Graveyard Shift. Again, Stephen King wasn't some juggernaut when it came to, you know, like I said, if you look at his box office, you know, Firestarter maybe made the same 20 million, you know, it's launched the career of Drew Barrymore. Moderate hits, let's call them, but it wasn't blockbusters. You know, it wasn't, when I saw Cujo, there was maybe like 50 people in the movie theater. You know, killer, no one wanted to see a Saint Bernard as a killer dog. You know, it's like Beethoven, you know, the dog. But one thing I'll say is Stephen King was always intriguing because it was a novel to film segue. It was a book that became a movie, and people always found that, hey, if it was good enough, you know, if they felt the book was good enough to make it a movie, it must be pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just like the Shining, you know, which was a great movie, by the way,
which is the one hits.
That was 1980, of course. And then his follow-ups again, and I'm of the age where I went to see every freaking movie he did every year. Almost every year there was a Stephen King movie, I went to see it. But it was never any kind of, you know, waiting on long lines or some kind of like the New York was buzzing about it. It was, again, you went there, you saw it. Did you like it? You know, it was okay. But Christine, I think, is one of the more underappreciated films overall, not just as a Stephen King movie, but even as John Carpenter, because as we talked about before, people talk about their favorite Carpenter films. You have to remind them that he did Christine, Ian, by the way. A lot of people forget. Oh, John Carpenter did that. I remember, matter of fact, the other day I was talking to a friend of mine, he's a real horror aficionado, and I was telling him about the podcast. Like, send me the link when it's aired and everything. I'll listen to it. I was like, what are you going to talk about? I said, Christine. Oh, man, so underrated. And I'm like, he thought like I did. I said, that's the first thing that came to his mind is like so underrated. You don't hear too many people talk about that movie. Because, again, if I told them we're going to be talking about Friday the 13th. I've heard that talked about a million times. But Christine he lit up because he's like, that's a good one. You never really hear anybody talking about that. I don't even think I've ever heard a podcast where they talked about Christine. So I was like, that's what I like, you know, to touch upon the underrated classics. And I think it is a classic. I think anybody who hasn't seen it, who's listening to this, go and watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. I highly doubt you'll dislike it because, again, it touches upon stuff that was always a factor. And in every culture, bullying, coming of age, turning it around when you're, you know, just like going from being a freshman to a senior. But they do it in basically a couple of weeks in this film. Mm-hmm. You know, you go from being the shit guy to the it guy. And also I think it's a story of friendship and loyalty. I think John Stockwell is a very good actor, very underrated in this. You know, Dennis, his friend, Dennis was a true friend to Arnie all the way to the end. You know, I think that's very underappreciated, John Stockwell's contribution as an actor and stuff. And to explain a little more, who people don't know, Arnie was the nerd. We talked about it, the downtrodden kind of guy. But he had a friend who was the football star. Yeah. And they were friends, and they never wavered from their friendship. It was Arnie who turned on Dennis, not the other way around. Dennis was trying to help Arnie the whole time. You know, Dennis could have been like, fuck this guy, and just, you know what I mean? It would have been just done with it, right? Because if you remember, Arnie was really starting to treat Dennis pretty lousy.
Yeah, he was.
In the movie, and, you know, Dennis got, yeah, and I'm not giving away too much. Again, this is with the first half hour, the changeover. And Dennis could have, you know, stole the girl from Arnie. He didn't. You know, Dennis was a really good friend. And you saw Arnie just turning into this, you know, incorrigible douchebag, becoming what Arnie was despised, and like that guy Buddy. In the end, I'll be honest with you, I hated Arnie as much as I hated Buddy at that point.
Yeah.
So the only guy I liked, I came away from that movie liking Dennis the most, John Stockwell.
Yeah, he was
my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And, you know, it's a good, like you say, it's Arnie became the thing he hated, which was the bully, wasn't it? You know, he turned into Buddy. That was it, you know? So,
yeah.
I think that's a really good point you raise.
And he had the ultimate bully car, and basically Christine was, and it's funny because, you know, what's funny, and I don't know if you get it too, it's a conflicted feeling you get, because you want to see Christine get Arnie's revenge on these shitbags, especially that gang in the beginning.
Yeah,
those guys who were picking up Moochie, the big fat guy Moochie.
Yeah, and
the other, right, those guys who were just a bunch of shitbags. I mean, listen, they even threatened to beat up the teacher. If you remember when Buddy got in the teacher's face, he was gonna beat him up. So you're like, yeah, fuck this guy. You know, we all knew guys like that in high school, you know, like who just, you know, just a bunch of fucking assholes that you couldn't wait. So again, but then you said, okay, I'm on board with Arnie. All right, I'm Team Arnie. But then within 15 minutes, you were off Team Arnie. Like it was, I guess it really does take you on a little bit of an emotional ride of how you feel. In that classroom scene, you're like, God, I want to see Arnie fuck these guys up. But within a half hour, you're like, fuck Arnie, Dennis is my guy. You know what I mean? That was like my guy. So I even wanted Dennis to hook up with Lee.
I thought they were when I first watched this. I thought they were at the end there, but we never quite got that. We never got it.
Yeah, Chris, listen, when I left the theater and we saw the ending, and you're talking about, you know, wrapping up our discussion on Christine, obviously the ending, what you said with the radio's playing, but then the, like a piece of the bumper, I guess, moves or the grill. I was thinking Christine too, you know what I mean? Maybe Christine too, you know, and that's what, maybe Christine comes after, you know, Artie's dead now, and maybe comes after Lee, say like they pan a few years later, Lee and maybe Dennis are married and the car comes back to haunt them. I was thinking maybe, I don't know, but it never happened. Never talk about it. And again, we talked about it earlier, not even a talk of a remake in general of the original storytelling, let alone a part two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see why there couldn't be something in the future. I'm with you as well, though. I would like to see them sort of stick to practical effects and all those sorts of things. I'm not a big lover of CGI. Even if it looks good at the time, it ages so quickly. So I mean, with the revival of Stephen King's Haven just now, who's to say there might not be a Christine remake in the next 5 to 10 years or beyond? But it's definitely something that's not came across my sphere anyway. But you know, my sphere is not particularly massive.
Let me tell you something from my lips to God's ears. Maybe like tomorrow there's a big report, remake of Graveyard Shift.
I know. Well, maybe you know, go on to Bloody Disgusting or something, and they'll be right there, front and center on their website.
well, outside of Pet Sematary, all the movies, no remakes of any of the other Silver Bullet, Firestarter, Cujo.
Even It is not really.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it. Of course,
I mean, it was what really sort of blew Stephen King back up, wasn't it? In the mid. I mean, when did that first one come out? 2016, 2017.
Something like that. Yeah, and I, for the record, I love the first one, not so much the second one.
Yep, exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
We agree on that. This is good.
You ever need a co-host who's going to agree with you, just give me a call. There you go.
But no, you know, so like you've obviously got that, but you're right. You know, all those films that you've listed, you don't even hear about them being remade. You know, you hear about original stories of his getting made again. You know, we had Dr. Sleep. We had Gerald's Game that came out a few years ago.
Oh, love Gerald's Game. Love that movie. Oh,
and Hush. So yeah. there's been some great stuff. But he's definitely had that renaissance in the last 10 years. So hopefully, you know, maybe one day we'll get the Christine universe sort of revisited as well, and maybe we can get something new from that. But
as long as they keep it to that car and not make it a different car, which I can picture if they remade it. Don't you have a feeling they wouldn't make it that car? It would be a different kind of car, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because I don't think they would obviously not remake it set in. I doubt they would remake it being set in the 70s. So yeah, they probably remake it in the 2000s or in the present day. So you're probably going to talk about a car from, I don't know, the 80s or the 90s maybe, rather than a 50s
car. I mean, can you imagine if it was made in modern day, like say 2022, and it's a 1958 car at that point, a car that's over 50 years old?
That would be amazing.
I mean, it would be amazing. But again, I just don't. I'm just surprised. I'm sure, you know, listen, we don't know everything, and sometimes stories don't get leaked out until you don't know till you know, as they say. I'm sure there's been somebody somewhere, some independent film, you know, may remake Christine.
Yeah.
Because as you said, you know, you always hear the Hollywood's out of ideas. I think it's just a different spin on stuff. And really, I say the same thing in the world of wrestling. There's nothing original. It's just a new spin on something that's been done before.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And you'll understand as well, you know, like you say, working in the nightclub industry, booking live events, there'll be certain things that you maybe need to keep a little bit quiet. And there'll be certain things that you need to keep quiet, but somehow someone has found something out. And then there's some things that successfully get kept quiet. And that's just the industry, isn't it? You know, people are always trying to find out what's going on, find out what's news happening. And, you know, there's always
The element of surprise, and I'm assuming you're still kind of a fan like that yourself. I still like surprises. I think surprise parties still work if you do it right, and you know someone doesn't leak it out. There's nothing like the element of catching somebody off guard, but in a positive way.
Yeah.
You know, it's different if you're getting bad news, but if it's something there's never a good time for bad news. Trust me, I've gotten enough of that. But I love when someone says, "I know this is not a good time for you." I'm like, "If it's bad news,
when would be? When
exactly.
Would be a good time?"
But good. What's something cool that's coming? You know, let play out. Just like I go through this in wrestling all the time, where it's like, Kev, who's going to be in WrestleMania next year? Who's going to be in the Hall of Fame? And even if I know, I'm like, don't you want to be surprised? I mean, even if I knew only because I was in the industry of the know, or I had privilege of getting a heads up, just like who's coming to concert, who's coming to town in New York in the fall. I happened to know of a couple of big acts that did book New York, hasn't been released yet. They even don't say anything on social media. And yeah, and I've been keeping promises quiet for 28 years. There's no problem for me to do it. Because I'm in a trust group of people, because I like people to be surprised. And I even get excited when I'm going to post something that I'm part of.
Yeah.
And I get to post it, and people are like, Kev, how long do you know about this? I'm like, I knew about a month. Oh man, how'd you get? I'm like, because I had to. You're excited. Oh, I can't. When the tickets go on sale? I love it. I mean, it's a great definitely. Thing. It's why does everybody always have to know how the magic is?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I call myself a lapsed wrestling fan. I think the last pay-per-view I watched was Hell in a Cell last year. I fell off a little bit over the past sort of 6 months.
I don't blame you.
But I remember, you know, you hear about, and you're talking about WrestleMania as well, and things like the Royal Rumble and that as well, you know, when people are saying, who's going to be in the Royal Rumble this year? Oh, so-and-so is going to come back. And, you know, I just think back of moments like, even most recently, 2020 Royal Rumble, when Edge returned. And I had no idea that Edge was returning to Royal Rumble. I'd managed to keep myself spoiler free. I'd literally avoided social media as much as I possibly could.
Well, I didn't know about that either. Like, you know, I have a pretty good friend who's NXT champion now, Karrion Kross. Me and him are friends outside. He was a fan of our old show. I remember before he even got into wrestling, he was a DTKC fan, listened to the podcast before he even got into wanted to be a wrestler. So, you know, and it's not that he gives me tips or anything, but when he got injured and had to forfeit the title, and Finn Balor wound up getting the belt. I knew when Kev was coming back, but I'm sworn not to say anything and stuff. So that's why, how did he come back so fast from injury? Did you know about him? Like, yeah, I knew about it. I just didn't. I knew he was because everyone's like, he's going to be out a year. Everyone's telling me, like, you know.
And you've just sat there.
he's going to be out a year. Where like Kross is like, I'm going to be back in 2 weeks. So it's like, you know, like it's like, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, watch Kross will, you know, then he'll get demoted to SmackDown. Everyone's like, it's almost like they want to like make you feel stupid for maybe knowing something. But then when he came back, it was like, holy shit, no surgery. He came back 4 months from that major shoulder injury. He didn't have surgery. I'm like, no, he never had surgery. He never said he had surgery. That was just a rumor that people thought. He was never going to be out a year.
Yeah.
But again, you let fans. And all I was saying to myself is, if you're a fan, wish him well and hope he comes back soon. And then when the music hits and he comes out on TV and you weren't expecting it, it's a nice surprise.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's nothing. You'll know yourself. I mean, like, I know you've been a fan of wrestling since you were you know, a child.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've had many moments like this, but there's nothing that quite beats that holy shit moment, is there, where you think,
no,
this thing
great,
has happened,
man.
I did not expect it, and it's amazing. You know, I was a fan of wrestling when I was a child, and then I sort of fell off for a long time, and I got back into it, and you know, I got back into it around the time when the Hardy Boys returned at WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
And to me,
that was a good surprise. That was a beautiful surprise.
Yeah, and
that
to me,
really nice.
And to me, they were my childhood wrestling idols. You know, as I was growing up very much in the era when the Hardy Boys were coming to sort of prominence. So when I came back into wrestling, and this was the first WrestleMania I'd watched in probably 10 years, and their music hits, and I honestly lost my shit for lack of a better word. That moment is there's nothing quite like it.
No, it's a great feeling. And again, people need to allow themselves to allow yourself to be vulnerable, allow yourself, just like when you go to a movie, allow escapism and vulnerability to seep in. You'll enjoy the experience a lot more. And I can tell you, as a soon to be 53-year-old man next month, you know, again, I, you know, some, you know, young people appreciate age and wisdom, and some people scoff at it. Ah, you know, like, you know, I know everything. I'm 20 years old. But the truth of the matter is again, it doesn't matter if it's 1935 or 2022 or 1986. Movies and music and wrestling and what you do here on the podcast, what I do, allow yourself to get excited about things, have the possibility of excitement, even if it ends up being a disappointment. Allow yourself to be vulnerable and open to the fact that you might enjoy something and you don't know everything and you don't need to know everything.
That's it.
And you don't got to search for where the bodies are buried all the time. Sometimes let it pop up out of the ground and whoa, my God, there it is. You know, again, the element of surprise is a part of life. And I don't understand people who don't, I need to know everything. I need to know what's happening day in, day out. And you can't, it's a miserable way to live your life, because you're going to be anxious. You're going to be an anxious, nervous, and frustrated person all the time. Because if you know something good or bad is coming down, expect the unexpected in life. Life is about that. And again, that's why we call our podcast Adventures, because we were trying to think of a word like a journey. And me and Carol were kicking around words like of how we're going to take this thing, how we're going to ride this podcast out, how it was going to play out. It's like an adventure. Yeah, an adventure. We like that word. So again, allow, even going into Christine, even if you're hearing what we're talking about, you say, I don't know, I'm listening to you guys tell me the concept. It doesn't sound like something I'll like. Well, watch it, because this is mine and Ian's perspective. And I think we're selling the movie pretty good, by
the way. I think so.
So if anybody takes negativity, I don't know. You know, some people seem to find negativity even in when people are hamming it up for the movie. But watch it and give Ian the feedback and let him know what you think and give a comment and say, hey, I agree with you on this. So this part I didn't like, or this part I totally related to. Again, go in with an open mind to watch things. I mean, even later on, I'm watching a couple of movie slasher films today. Low budget, nothing like great on on Netflix. I've been meaning to watch, and some of them look okay, some of them don't. But again, I'm just going to allow myself to watch it. I read, you know, and I didn't go on Wikipedia. I didn't read the reviews. I want to not do that. Yeah. So I don't get jaded. A couple of friends recommended it to me, and that's all I needed, because a friend of mine goes, Kev, you'll love this movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to watch it, okay? And then I'll probably either rave about it on Twitter later, or I'll bash it.
Yeah.
So and then, that's what I'll do.
But then you love doing that with your friends as well. You know, you say, oh, mm-hmm. you recommended this movie to me.
Right, exactly.
You know, like last week on the show, just before we move on.
No, sure.
Last week on the show, we reviewed Tusk. I don't know if you've seen Tusk.
The guy transforms into a walrus.
Yes.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it, but I've seen a bunch of clips from it. I never saw it though.
Well, so I won't spoil anything for it. Don't worry. But I had seen it before. One of my co-hosts, Lucy, had seen it before, but my other co-host, Lindsay, she had never seen it before. And I had spent the entire week I was just excited to hear what she had to say about it, because it's such an insane concept of a movie, you know? So it's that whole thing again about allowing yourself to be open-minded to what other people have to say about things, you know? Like you say, if someone comes up to me and says, you know what, I heard your review on Christine, I watched the movie, but I didn't really like this because X, Y, and Z, da 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 da, and I'll be like, yeah, okay, that's fair. That's perfectly fine. Sure. That's fair. That's your opinion. And, you know, and I'll thank them for checking us out and then go and check the movie, you know, because I always love when someone, you know, because we've had it happen a few times where someone will say, oh, I watched this movie based on your recommendation. And to me, that's one of the biggest compliments I think someone could give us on the podcast when we're doing movie reviews. So, I love it. And I think everyone should go into everything with an open mind.
Definitely.
Okay, right. I'm very much aware that I said I was only going to keep you for an hour.
Oh, it's okay. I'm enjoying myself, and I had the rest of the afternoon free, so I'm good. Don't worry. It's all
okay.
Good.
Well, we'll move on to our next segment. We'll get into the trivia. There's not a huge amount of trivia that we haven't already talked about, because we've gone into pretty good depth about behind the scenes and what was going on and John Carpenter and the score and all those mm-hmm. sorts of things. But there's a few things we always do the finances. So as we were talking about, budget just under $10 million, box office $21 million. So I would still class that as a financial success. But like you say, if someone from 2021 is looking at that, and then they're seeing things like, you know, the Avengers and all that, then it pales in comparison. Yeah. But, you know, adjust for inflation as well, you know, and all those sorts of things. We talked a lot about Stephen King being the writer of this movie. Of course, Bill Phillips is the writer of the screenplay for this movie.
Right.
Stephen King did not write the screenplay. And so one of the things I found quite interesting was that, and this was actually on one of the DVD commentaries, documentaries on the DVD, so I'm not sure if you maybe have seen it or not. He said that the movie technically didn't have enough violence in it to justify an R rating, but they were so afraid to send the movie out with a PG rating because they thought no one would see it. So they purposefully went back and sort of added in lots of profanities and swear words to get the movie to an R rating. And then later on, after the movie came out, it was criticized by several places for their heavy use of profanities. I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The word pussy was used a lot in the movie. And that garners an R rating because there were the teenage sex movies like Porky's, Last American Virgin, even though back then they had nudity. The word, you know, anything referencing a woman's vagina for some reason, not dick or cock or anything like that.
No, of course not.
Always a female anatomy got an R rating. I noticed that actually.
We can't know or hear anything about the female anatomy. That is sacred.
No, exactly. But I remember the word. I remember going to Christine, and I guess it was part of, we were young and we were with our dates when we were freshmen in high school. So I remember even that word was a little cringy hearing it in front of mixed company with the girls. And I just remember one of the girls' moms who saw it with the dad. They went to see it. And when we were in their house and like having lunch or something, the mom's like, I like the movie, but the language, my God, so much this and that. The P word and the P word and the F word. And they used the word, you know, faggot and stuff like that too back then. And that was a regular, you know, in the movies, they use that word a lot, you know, which is like a no-no word now here across the boards, not just in the States, but everywhere. So yeah, they used a lot of, you know, gay references and stuff, but that was the put downs of the nerds back then from the bullies. They would say those kind of things. And yeah, and there seemed to be, and quite honestly, and I'm sure people who are very, you know, woke people will not like to hear this. A lot of them, the male high school guys, the females were looked at as conquests.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Who can get her? Who's gonna get her? Who's gonna, and not in a term of like sexual assault, but dated, like who's gonna score? Who's gonna score with that girl? That was a big thing. And I'm somewhere right now in college dorms, people are talking like that, but back then it was kind of looked at. It's unfortunate. Like I said, it wasn't a fair balance. Women were looked at as conquests and prizes. And if you remember, Ian, in the film, the boys were all around the table in the library. Who's going to ask her? Who's going to go get Lee? Who's going to get, they were eyeing her up and down like she was a prize. And... Yeah, exactly. And then when Arnie got, how did Arnie get her? Like that whole term of getting her, it sounds like they're hunting her or something. Again, that was the way it was back then, wrong or right, or whether you're indifferent to that stuff. People do take messages out of stuff like that. And that's just, you're talking about almost 40 years ago.
Like, I think, we have to understand that, obviously, you know, we consider ourselves pretty woke on this podcast and the main show. And obviously, you know, the terms that we're talking about, they're very outdated and are no longer acceptable. But there has to be an understanding of the change of times. You know, I think you have to go into these things with a slightly more open mind and talk about the change of times. And it's perfectly fine to talk about, the themes of that thing. And myself, Lucy and Lindsay, we've talked about these themes in some of these old movies a whole bunch, and it can create very interesting conversations, but you do have to go into it with that open mind, don't you? That, you know, it's a different era, isn't it?
It's part of the discussion. It's part of the discussion because I can tell you guys, as an older guy, probably a lot older than people listen to this podcast, as a 53-year-old guy, I remember I was in my younger years, 10, 11, 12, going back and watching films that my father grew up watching in the 40s and 50s. And even as a young kid, I found it weird the way people of color were treated and talked to, and Chinese people were made fun of and stuff. And my grandfather would say that's the way it was back then. And my grandfather always goes, doesn't make it right, but that's the way it was.
And you evolve.
And again, you evolve and you show how it evolves. You can't now say, well, I won't watch Abbott and Costello because I didn't like that they were mocking the Chinese butler. I thought that was pretty reprehensible. Again, it's an evolution. You know, listen, Cain and Abel didn't exactly behave in the best light, back in the Bible. You know, Adam and Eve, you know, the apple and the snake. I mean, even biblical tales going all the way back. Do you think the Romans treated Jesus Christ very well? Let's take things into perspective of the sign of the times, and we grow and we evolve as a society. And me and Carolyn talked about this. I'm kind of glad we're talking about it a little bit, because I think it's important in the context of seeing a movie like Christine. It plays into the wheelhouse of discussion that Carolyn said the same thing. We're not going to alter history and not talk about things that might be a little uncomfortable because we're not then fully discussing the film.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely
You can't. There's nothing to be offended by. First of all, it's a time past of years ago where most people weren't even born yet. So there's nothing to eradicate or erase in history. And again, once you do that, you get into a vicious cycle of what do you not talk? You won't be able to talk about anything from the past. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? No one should be uncomfortable. What you should say is, Well, you know, hey, I'm proud of society for, you know, I'm happy to be living in a time where that's not done anymore. But and I can see it from back then. Like I see the growth. I see 1970s films different from 80s films, different from 90s. The decades, they change from the early 2000s to where we are now, almost night and day. And even forget about in terms of technology, we're night and day in terms of thinking and mm-hmm. thought process. But that's part of the life experience, and you can't put your head in the sand and pretend that it's not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm one of our friends from another podcast was on a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Night of the Living Dead, which of course, right. Absolutely iconic movie. But you had, I forget his name, is it Dwayne Jones, as the lead role, Ben,
right,
movie, yeah. and you know to have having a black lead in a movie in the mid to late 60s was unheard of, and so like you have to have these conversations. Listen, I studied history at university, you know, so having these sorts of conversations is something that I'm always very happy to do. But you have to have the conversations about what things are like. It's vital. Listen, you know, there are people out there and around this country, you know, there are people out there who think we should keep up things like statues to these people, and you know, we have statues of slave traders and all those things. And I don't agree. Like, take those statues down. We don't want to celebrate these people, but it's important. They're important to know about.
You know, it's interesting. I thought about the statues, maybe not displayed in a city outside, but maybe a museum, a specific museum that you have a section of people of the past who were, might be thought of heroes, but then history would tell a different story later on. Basically, you know, giving the full story from then to now to up to date. Because remember, those statues were in parks for many, many years, mm-hmm. going back to the 20s, 30s, 40s. People weren't really thinking about, you know why? Because it was a fucking statue. It wasn't a real person. You know what I'm saying? But so that's why people didn't put that much port. People go, it's the symbolism of it. But again, there were other things, you know, listen, there's a lot of things on people's mind, let alone the government and stuff. And we got a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. You know, you want, you know, sometimes I think everybody wants all things to be all important to all people.
Yes.
And they get mad when it's not. And listen, if the Italians all of a sudden become, you know, and I'm Italian, obviously Italian Irish. My mom was from Ireland. My dad's from Italy. So, but I never took it as, you know, an affront or attack, like, you know, when people like, oh, everyone in the Italian is in the mafia, whatever. I'm so offended. I'm like, listen, I think everybody, there's these stereotypical things and there's comedic little digs that people take at people. And I think you can understand what's harmless and what's included in the movie,
yes, because absolutely.
It's out of time. Then being, you know, and I hate the word, using the word triggered, but being, yeah. You know, but everyone can relate to it, obviously, in modern times. But again, I think to try to eradicate history doesn't make any sense. And I think if you start pulling again, it won't stop anywhere, because quite honestly, dude, I can go and I watch on Roku channel, I have the Roku, and I'll go in the classic TV shows,
yeah,
and I'll watch shows like from the 70s and even 80s and stuff, and you could find something offensive.
Oh, yeah.
Every show.
We have those here. You know, we've British sitcoms from the sort of 80s and the early 80s and to the sort of early 90s. And these are shows that, you know, are still to this day revered as being some of the best TV that we've put out. You know, you know, there's some pretty heinous stuff that gets said in them. But you're right, you know, like, as a Scotsman, I grew up watching things in popular media, things like Groundskeeper Willie and The Simpsons. And
Willie, of course.
You know,
yeah.
So like, as a Scotsman, I'm pretty used to being portrayed in the media in a certain way, and to Scottish people being portrayed in the media in a certain way. And you know, if you hear someone who's not from Scotland or not from the UK, you think, oh, you all wear kilts and you all go around and you chase haggis about and all those sorts of things. And I think I've had haggis about 3 times in my entire life. Well, I've worn a kilt about three times in my entire life.
A guy who I, a band called the Four Horsemen, and a guy who's a Scotsman, by the way, and he goes by the name of Haggis, and he calls himself Haggis.
Of course,
he was in the English rock band The Cult. Many
years
ago.
Okay.
And he has a real first name, but he prefers to be called Haggis. And they he gave himself that name when he came to New York. He just got everyone called him Haggis. And when they looked up what it was, he goes, "Why do you want to be called Haggis?" So it's like, it's just a cool, he goes, "It's a cool name." No. So, but it's funny, you mentioned that. I just was watching the other day, and you talk about depicting Scotsmen a certain way, Scottish people. So I Married an Axe Murderer. Did you see that movie with Mike Myers?
Yes.
Who has always played Mike Myers. I guess Mike Myers has Scottish ancestry.
I believe he does.
Because he always plays the characters, and he seems to really throw himself into it. And of course, it was about a Scottish family living in Seattle, and they were playing the Bay City Rollers every Saturday night. Crank the SATURDAY, and it's a funny, and it's one of my favorite scenes because it's so funny. And obviously his father is this aggressive old school Scotsman, and if you're not like Sean Connery, you're not a man, you know what I'm saying? Yes. So it's like I always wonder, the Scottish people appreciate that humor, and there is something to that where Sean Connery is the epitome of a man. Like, is that in the Scottish culture, the old school
Scottish humor is incredibly self-deprecating, you know?
It is, right? I know.
We will take the piss out of ourselves way more than we will take the piss out of other people, or just as much as, you know. And I think maybe that's why we potentially get away with doing certain things and saying certain things, especially when we go to other places. We maybe get away with a little bit more than certain people might, you know, because we turn, I think, no, don't get me wrong, we have our fair share of very unfunny people, but I personally think, Scottish people we're quite a funny lot, and so I think we get away with saying a bit more, because we often turn that sort of funny lens on ourselves, and you know there's a lot of people who get really offended by some of the words we say, and to us, a lot of them are terms of endearment, you know. We call each other swear words and things like that, and we use of endearment. So I thought you were going there.
No, it's no problem.
But I suppose we better get through the rest of this episode.
Sure, absolutely. But I've enjoyed it. This has become the Christine Plus episode.
Christine
Plus, yeah. Christine XL. Exactly.
So just a couple of little pieces of trivia before we get on. Apparently, 15% of the movie's entire budget went on Christine and went on the various sort of stunt cars that they made, so that means they spent around $1.5 million on Christine and all the sort of stunt cars and things like that, which is a pretty sizable chunk of money to be spending on the cars. Only true. Two of them were not destroyed by the end of the movie, so there was only two left of the cars that used. One of those surviving Plymouth Furies was sold in 2004 for $167,000.
Wow.
Which is crazy money. How much did he buy it for in the movie? Was it 250?
Something like that. Yeah, I think it was 250.
Last thing I've got.
Even though the old man went, what did I say, 300?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Yeah. Classic negotiating technique there. Apparently, Kevin Bacon was originally offered the lead role in this film, but rejected it to go and film Footloose instead. And Nicolas Cage apparently also auditioned for the role of Buddy, but was not selected. I think that would have been a very different movie.
Yeah, it would have been, right? Yeah, it would have been.
But that's it. That's all I've got for trivia for this episode. So we'll get into the final segment, and we'll talk about our ratings and our final thoughts. As always, we will start off with the critics' scores. IMDb scored this movie a 6.7 out of 10. Metacritic scored it at 57 out of 100. The Rotten Tomatoes critics scored it at 69% fresh, with the Rotten Tomatoes audience scoring it at 64%. So everyone kind of in the same ballpark there, which is unusual. The critics' consensus is not particularly complimentary to John Carpenter. The cracks are starting to show in John Carpenter's directorial instincts, but Christine is nonetheless silly, zippy fun. I think that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, again, I remember at least in locally here in New York, the papers giving a pretty good review, like 3 stars out of 4, because it was you know, a suspenseful thriller. It was a good popcorn movie, as they call it. So yeah, I don't remember anybody but again, nothing surprises me. There's somebody out there who, you know, will rip, you know, call Clint Eastwood a mediocre actor. So, you know, yeah, okay, but he's also one of the most successful guys, biggest stars of all fucking time. So it's just like, you just roll your eyes at stuff like this. I don't think John Carpenter was losing it at that point. I thought he was, it's a different kind of picture, and you can't expect, the problem, as everyone says, when you have big success, everyone expects success all the time.
Yeah.
With everything you do has to be top, you know, what have you done lately kind of thing. You know, everything's got to top the other. You know, and really what it's about is just making good quality films and letting the majority of your fan base enjoy it. And again, I don't see how you could give Christine a bad review. I would have thought the ratings were a little bit, the reviews were a little bit higher than that. But yeah, I thought it was, that is harsh. But, you know, at least they got, you know, they gave it a little bit of a compliment, even if it was a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, definitely. We've seen many horror movies that we get great enjoyment out of getting pretty poor reviews. And that's a little bit on the higher side in terms of the score. But we'll talk about our scores for it then. So, Kevin, out of 10... if you would please, what would you score Christine?
For me, I would give Christine an 8 out of 10. I think that's fair. Without going too over the top, and without 7 would be too low, 9 would be too high. I would give it a solid 8.
Yeah, I'm right with you on there. I am also going to give Christine an 8 out of 10. Listen, like we said earlier, if you could sit and go through this movie with a fine tooth comb and find aspects and things that didn't work quite so well, problems, plot, whatever. But this is a fun film.
It's a fun movie.
It's just fun. This is one of those films you can put on, not really think about it too much. You know, there are certain movies that are like that, where you put on and, you know, there's loads to sort of digest and think about and analyze, and they can be great too. But this is not one of those movies. You can put this on. It's fun. It's got some really cool scenes, some really nice kills, which we haven't really talked about at all, is the actual sort of kill scenes as well.
Yeah, I mean, the kills were good. Obviously, it has to usually do with some sort of constriction of the airwaves, so to speak, suffocation, strangulation, whatever you want to call it. But obviously the other one would be mowing people down and mashing people into concrete foundations.
Yeah, which is always a great imagery as well for any horror.
Oh yeah, as they said, what'd they say, cut Moochie in half, it was easy to shovel up a pile of shit or whatever. Like that. So I mean, something like, when, you know, again, without giving, you know, because I always have a hard time, you know, in my mind I'm like, Kev, remember, there's people who didn't see this, because I'm thinking everybody saw this, right? But but it's really, you know, that's not the case. Don't you guys do that too, going in sometimes where you almost, not purposefully, but give away too much movie, where you say, oh yeah, that's right, some people might not have seen it.
Yeah.
You know? No, so that's the way I think about this. Yeah, because it's such an old movie, and it's so many outlets you could find it. I always, oh yeah, that's right, there's probably 18, 19 year old or 16 year old out there who has not remotely seen this yet. Yeah, so there you go.
So in case you're not aware, on this podcast, in terms of our final score, we take an average of our scores, the host, and we do an average with the critic scores as well, and just to hopefully get a bit of balance. So Christine, combining all the scores and working out the average, gets an average score of 6.7 out of 10. It is, out of 103 movies that we have now covered on the podcast, tied for 48th on the list. It has the exact same score as 28 Weeks Later, and a movie you talked about not long ago, A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yes.
So it's right up there. And it's in some, I think it's in some good company. I think it deserves to be up there. Sure. And yeah, just overall a fun movie, definitely one that I would recommend anyone goes to see.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Again, I believe it's on Netflix now. You could find it probably for free on YouTube. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many. Today, what a great time to be living in if you're a movie fan, a movie buff, because 20 years ago, if I said, where do I find it? Where can I find? I can't find it on the internet. Try and help me.
You know what? Like, I'm turning 30 in a couple of months. So I'm not by any means, you know, coming to any sort of massive numbers in terms of age in my life. But one of the things I did over the pandemic was go back to college. Obviously, with that means that I'm in classes and things, and it's mostly online. It's in classes and things with people who are, right, you know, 17, 18, and that sort of age. And I remember I tried to tell someone that you used to have to send away for DVDs for Netflix. Used to post DVDs to your home.
That's right. Yep.
And they couldn't believe it. And nothing has made me feel older than that conversation. But you're right. You know, like, I mean, even if you can't find this movie for free, you can pick it up on Amazon, I'm sure, for a couple of quid, a couple of dollars. You know, it's not going to cost you $20 movie or anything like that. You know,
so yeah, and I would hope that people would even like it enough to maybe even buy it. I mean, and put it in their collection. Listen, one thing we've also learned today, there's still collectors are very much a thing. You know, there's people who are toy collectors or movie horror buffs and stuff. That's never going to go away.
Never.
Technology may change, but our human interests of movies and culture and fashion and throwbacks and stuff, it's never going to go away.
No, absolutely.
Thank God.
In 50 years time, you will still have someone who owns the Freddy glove, you know, from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, and that'll be the prize of their collection, you know, collectors, things like that. And you'll know yourself, I know you're also, like, you know, a big fan of baseball as well, so you'll know yourself, from wrestling memorabilia to baseball cards to all of these sorts of things. There will always be a market for these things.
Always be a market, and again, you know, because what's old is new again, as they say a lot of times. What was out of fashion comes back into fashion. It's sick. Cyclical, you know, things come around. The only thing that we haven't seen come around in quite a while is the popularity of pro wrestling again. I'd be doing a lot better fiscally on my wrestling podcast.
But yet they just keep making so much money.
Exactly, and you got a Scotsman as one of the top stars now, Drew McIntyre. So
I've seen him many times over here back when he used to wrestle for ICW.
Oh, you saw him in the Independence. Wow.
Yeah, okay. I saw him over here in ICW. ICW, it's sort of had its moment I'd say 5 or 6 years ago. It's sort of, obviously with COVID in the last couple of years, things have had to stop and things like that. But it was maybe not quite in the same sort of realm as it was. I remember actually going to a TNA show when that came over here. They used to do their UK tours. And I remember going to a TNA show. And that's, I also met Drew Drew Galloway, as he was known at the time. I met him there, and I met Matt Hardy there as well. And
nice.
You know, they were doing, it was at the time, I don't know if you remember, I know TNA isn't something that you maybe talk about a huge amount, but they used to do their British boot camp.
Okay.
And they would do this tour, and we would have these shows with all the British people, and someone who ended up wrestling for them, Grado. I don't know if that's someone you're familiar with. I know he wrestled for TNA for
Grado. Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, I know who he is.
And he was the hot act for us. And I know he's not necessarily the most talented wrestler in the world, but he was like the hot act. And the main event of the show was Grado versus Al Snow.
Really?
And this And this was in 2014, I want to say. 2014, and our main event was Grado versus Al Snow. So,
that was back when
TNA still had Samoa Joe and MVP and
AJ Styles
and Bobby Roode and all those sorts of people. You know, TNA was, listen, it was never ever WWE. It was, even no matter how much they wanted to try and be WWE, it was never ever going to be it. But they had their moment. They had their moment in the spotlight.
Yeah, they did, and I come down hard on a lot of wrestling federations, like AEW especially. people think I hate it, but I mean, I just enjoy kind of, again, I hate using the word triggering people, but triggering, not trolling. I don't think trolling is trolling is when you're not a real account. I always feel like I get the terminology and stuff, but every time I hear a troll, I think of it's a fake profile.
Yeah,
and
there's a line, isn't there? There's a line.
A person who's hiding, and I'm certainly not. in hiding. You know, I'm pretty known by people know, everyone knows where I live practically. So, but I love, I still love wrestling. I still have a love for wrestling. Do I love as much as I used to? No. And that's the other thing. If people are wondering, does he do wrestling podcasts anymore? Yeah, I'm going to be, I do a Patreon show every week called Castle Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And I also do a show called KNT Chronicles with my female co-host Trez, who's another good friend of mine. I still do that. And but I'll be getting back into the mainstream on a new show, if you don't mind, I announce it here. Called Par for the Course, which is a terminology I've used. It's almost become kind of like a tagline catchphrase for me over the years. I have a merchandise with it on. Someone made the merchandise. I didn't make it, but someone said, yeah, let's use that for, I said, that's just a terminology I used to use in the clubs where they would say, this kind of night, par for the course. And then everyone's like, oh, you should make that. So no one never really used that as any kind of, you can't copyright something that's a mainstream phrase, but it's something that I kind of took on my own. So I said, why don't I make a show called Par for the Course, which means what you expect or what's to be expected.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, that's a great idea. So I was like, it just kind of came into play and I was looking for a place to shop it. And I think I have an announcement soon, and I think people will be a little surprised who I'm going to be aligned with. And, pretty major announcement. But again, my real love right now is, and that's why I'm even on the show, because it's a similar, we're almost like a kindred spirit show of your show, the show I'm doing with Chicky right now, Castle and Chicky's Podcast Adventures. We're not a horror pod. We're going to cover a lot of horror movies, but we're about all sorts of movies. Like I said, this week we're doing a comedy retrospective on the career of Steve Martin. But then, to be honest with you, 2 weeks from now, we could do a whole thing on, on The Thing and the remake of The Thing, So again, we're just picking subjects that we like. But again, wrestling's still a passion of mine, but movies, such neck and neck with wrestling, just such a close second. So anytime, again, I was thrilled to come on here and I've had a great time today. I know we went longer than, but that's what you get when you have me on the show. This is what happens. I should have warned you.
I'll schedule in a second hour next time.
Exactly. Yeah. Just put +++ on the on the description, and then you'll be fine.
This is one of the things we're about to change in a couple of weeks, actually, is we're about to start doing live shows. So.
Oh, you're doing live shows. Wow. We're doing pre-records. Also, let people know, we're doing an old school, if you go in there, expect to see, we do audio because we really wanted people to focus on listening to the show. And I'm like an old school radio guy. And also, quite honestly, the audio podcast still do very, very well. I mean, we were just floored by the amount of downloads we got on our pilot episode. I was very happy about it, and I'm kind of following in the mode of Jim Cornette and Brian Last, who do their podcast. They're very successful. Jim is just does never want to do video. Like, he loves the radio concept, so do I. Again, maybe down the road we'll probably maybe do some video stuff, maybe even for Patreon, but right now we're just focusing on the audio because we really wanted people to pay attention to the show. And I think if they're focused too much on what are you wearing? Or if you're looking at the camera, you're staring. It's no offense to any video podcast. I always just felt that hearing something is better than a visual because, quite honestly, there's not a lot we can do outside of sitting in a chair and talking into a mic. We can't get up around and do a little dance or anything like that. So there's that. I find myself listening to podcasts on the go. So I can only, I can't watch a screen or I'll crash a car or something. So again, the class, if everyone's like, we're doing the classic audio stuff. And if you want to see my hot co-host, you can go on a Twitter page and look at pictures of her all day long. So there you go.
Yeah, no, we're the same. We're predominantly the podcast. We do some live stuff. And like I said, we're going to do some live video stuff soon as very much. But everything we do, we're going to be releasing on the main podcast feed anyway. Nice. So we're releasing.
Live can be very daunting, but once you get into the groove of it, because me and DT will live every Monday, I'm getting accustomed now to pre-record aspect. Like, we record on Tuesday, we drop the show on Wednesday. Live is good. What you just gotta get this way and just can't tell yourself in your mind that you're on live, because then you'll psych yourself. You'll say, God, yeah, I didn't mean exactly. I said that. Oh, damn, I didn't mean to say that. Like, people are going to ride me for that I just said. but listen, you can always go back and maybe they'll hear it on the live show. But if you edit the show, you can always, when you drop the show online, you can always change it. But live is not as, overpowering as you think it is. I eventually will go live too on the Castle Chicken podcast, but my co-host is brand new to podcasting and I want her to get her feet wet. And I said, let me give her 6 months in a pre-record. It's like anything else, like almost like being in NXT and going up to the major leagues. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You just need that time. We're lucky. We've trialed a few sort of practice live shows here and there where we've, you know, aside from the podcast where we've talked about a various subject and things like that. And we've done, you know, live Q&As and things like that before as well. So we're hopefully ready. I think we're decently versed in how it works and how it all goes. So fingers crossed it all goes well. But that's definitely where we're going to be going in the future. But Kevin, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show. I really, really appreciate you coming on. We've, like you say, it's Christine plus, but we've gotten into some really, really awesome discussions tonight.
Absolutely.
And you know, we've talked about a whole variety of things, from, you know, what was politically correct way back when, and to John Carpenter, and to all sorts of things. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I've had an absolute blast. And it doesn't even feel like it's been 2.25 hours. So that's always a good sign.
Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. It's true. And I thank you so much for having me on. It's been great. I said it's definitely made my day, let alone probably my weekend. And I wish you guys well, and anything I could do to help you guys, or if you need anything, if you need any advice or anything, hit me up on private message. I'll gladly do anything I can for you guys and give my best to your co-host. And I'll be a regular listener now, and I will definitely give you a shout out on our podcast coming up this Tuesday. We'll definitely shout you out. And anytime you want me to come back, I'll come back. I've enjoyed this thoroughly, and I really mean that.
Yeah, no, you're welcome back on the show anytime. Like I say, I've had an absolute blast. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to you guys for downloading and listening to this episode at home. And we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.